My first ever interview for the TrickedByTheLight.com website. I'm Wayne Bush and I started the website over 10 years ago. It was a result of becoming dissatisfied with the religious and philosophical ideas we've been given for why we are here. I had an epiphany that the predominant religious figure or savior in each major religion were princes. In Hinduism, Prince Krishna, in Buddhism, Prince Buddha, Judaism, like Moses, the Prince of Egypt, and in Christianity, Jesus was in the line of King David and was mocked as King of the Jews. Burke's Peerage, the genealogical guide of royalty, says that the British royal family is descended from Muhammad of Islam. So I came to the conclusion the royal families and ruling elite created religion to control mankind by promising a reward in heaven or a better life next time around if we do what we're told, and by threatening us with eternal hellfire or a miserable life next time around if we misbehave. They tell us to turn the other cheek and the meek shall inherit the earth. This way we would not revolt, so they get to keep all their power and gold. And of course they profit handsomely by these holy wars. Wars in the name of Jesus or Allah. So the premise of the website is that life is a game. Most likely a holographic computer simulation of a drama like a movie or a play. And the plot is that we are prisoners or slaves, and aliens are feeding off our energy and recycling our energy. They achieve this by luring our souls to the moon, which is a processing and distribution center, their command base. Tricked by the Light explores the possibility that we are tricked into going to the light of death. Today, I'm going to be interviewing a near-death experiencer who experienced a demiurge. He has to be called by that term because he has received several death threats over some of the things he has tried to talk about before. It seems near-death experiencers don't like this subject, and some who are deeply entrenched in religious dogma aren't tolerant of the message either. But what he has to say is extremely important and must be heard. I trust those who are ready to consider deep topics like this will find this interview. I guess first we should define the term demiurge. It's a Gnostic concept. The Gnostics were a sect of Christians who went underground. They viewed the physical as bad or evil and claimed to know things, which is what the term Gnosis means. I became interested in them, thinking if mainstream Christianity is mostly propaganda, then perhaps the Gnostics had something interesting to say. I first heard the term Archons when researcher John Lash appeared on Art Bell's Coast to Coast radio show and talked about a group of entities mentioned in the Nag Hammadi text that were mind parasites. The Gnostics used the term demiurge to describe the creator of evil, or god of this world, and my dictionary of ancient deities defines the demiurge as Jehovah, who of course is the Old Testament Hebrew god known for his jealousy. The whole center is in the hands of an angry god motif. But this marks the first interview I've ever conducted. What my guest has to say is astounding. It is the most extensive near-death experience I have ever heard, and I've not heard any other near-death experiencer talk about these things before. So I wanted to give a little background on the reason for the interview and how it came about. So I have this comments section on my website, on most of the main pages, and I got this page on the light, and somebody commented that when they mentioned to, they know somebody who had a near-death experience, and when they mentioned to them that the light is a trick, they just laugh. And so he said it would be interesting to hear what some near-death experiencers have to say. So I thought, well, you know, that's a very valid point, and I know that that's probably my biggest contention point is the near-death experiencers, who most of them have gone to the light and have wonderful things to say about it. So I thought I would go to my one of the nearby IANS groups meetings, which is the International Association for Near-Death Studies, where people who have had near-death experiences come to share their experiences, kind of like a support group. So I went, and it went around the room, and everybody shared their experiences, and one in particular mentioned the word psyops. He just touched on it just in like one sentence. He said there's a lot of psyops going on the planet or something like that. I thought to myself, well, here's somebody who could probably understand where I'm coming from with conspiracy theories and that kind of stuff. So I talked to him after the meeting, and I mentioned right off the bat, the first thing I mentioned was if he had ever heard of anybody talking about the demiurge or archons, and he said that he had met the demiurge. And so and I told him about my website, and I asked him if he'd be willing to come on and do an interview, and he graciously accepted, so he's here. And I guess welcome to my first podcast show, and congratulations on being my first guest. there anything you want to tell us about yourself, or do you just want to start right off by explaining how the near-death experience happened?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me to talk about this topic. To me, it's the least well-received part of my near-death experience. My near-death experience is very extensive. I remember it as if it just now happened. Now, to say meeting, you know, what you've defined as the demiurge, you know, I don't know if I would define that being as evil, first of all. Now, that's kind of a subjective term. And I want to be very clear that the words that we use are not always, you know, going to be exactly the same. The way that somebody else said it is not going to be the way I perceived it. And so if we can be clear about that, I mean, you mentioned archons, and while I have some understanding of that, I don't know them as archons. I do have a sense that there are beings looking over my shoulder, and some people have called those angels. Others have called them their higher self. And yet, you know, I don't think of them as, you know, totally being negative, although I do perceive them as not having a sensitivity to my pain, my suffering. It seems to me that they're there, whatever it is that's out there, and they are watching me very closely. They understand my thoughts. They understand my emotions. They understand my intentions, but they are, don't feel my suffering. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And so maybe if you started explaining about the near-death experience, because I'm sure it'll be part of the experience as you explain it, right? That you encountered some of these things.
Well, you know, to begin with, I just want you to know that I'm a chess player. I'm not the best chess player in the whole world. However, I play a lot of chess. And before I was in the military, I played simulators. We used little metal figures, little metal tanks, soldiers. And I simulated wars just for almost all of my young life, from the time I was just, you know, preteen all the way through the time that I died. So, you know, my perspective on how I see things may be different than, say, someone who, you know, had a lifestyle that wasn't as, I don't know, almost psychotic like I had. I mean, my life was just consumed with killing. Killing, capturing.
You're in the military? Or?
Yes. I was in the military, but I want to go back a little bit before then, okay? When I was a child, young child, I used to be afraid of the dark because there was something under my bed. And a lot of people that are, when they're children, they have these reflections. You know, there's something under my bed. There's something there. And I really think that there is something there. If it's just an energy or whatever it is, there's something that we don't like that's down there. And I would sleep with the lights off, and then my mother would turn the lights off. And then there would be a little bitty light crack underneath the door. And I would suck the sheets around my head, and I would just leave just a little piece so I could breathe and so I could look out of the sheets at the light underneath the door. Now, am I the only person that's ever experienced it? I think that there's a lot of children that probably have experienced something like that, because I knew there was something under my bed. And most adults will say, there's really nothing underneath your bed. There is not. And perhaps there's not a physical something there, but I think the fear of the unknown, whatever that is, It's something that creates inside of us a need to respond in some way. And so I would respond by looking at the light. And then when I would fall asleep, I would literally leave my body. I would fly around my neighborhood. I'd see my lost Frisbee that I had lost. And the next day I could go and retrieve that Frisbee. And I could see the transformers on electrical poles. I mean, I could see the numbers on the sides of them. It wasn't like, you know, I was, you know, going through some dreamscape, because it wasn't a dreamscape. It was my real neighborhood. And I would circle around my neighborhood and get wider and wider. And the force of my will would keep me aloft. And when my will would drop, I would start descending. And that freedom of flying around in the dark above my neighborhood, it was exhilarating. And I knew that I was safe when I was flying. I knew it.
Do you think this helped prepare you for the extensiveness of the near-death experience that you encountered?
You know what? I think that there are people who are more likely to have near-death experiences. And I think those who have had flying dreams, maybe, you know, where they don't have a problem leaving their body, are more likely to have them.
Fear of the unknown. Fear can shut down a lot of this kind of paranormal experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I could start there and say, I had flying dreams, lots of them, and that was my escape. And I loved flying. And so, you know, but what happened inside of my lifetime is that I was really small person. I was very tiny. I mean, I was the second smallest person in the eighth grade. I mean, if you can imagine.
I was too.
You know, and I built these defenses inside of my mind, you know, these defenses being that I'm going to be powerful and I'm going to, you know, be able to defeat my enemies. And so I'm going to be more clever than the other person. You know, I'm going to outrun them. I'm going to outfight them in some way by being smarter than them. So it was always this concept inside of me that I needed to defeat my enemies. And so I kept on creating enemies, you know, and I would read books about, the Germans. You know, and I would read every book that you could imagine about the Germans. And I loved flying, so I read every book about the aces, mostly German aces. And I read about the American aces, and I read about every book you can imagine on aviation inside of my little school. And then I branched out to the Navy, the Army, the different types of things. And each step was like a setting me up to create a sense of empowerment inside of me, this little person, you know, kind of the Napoleon complex or the Hitler complex, you know, the little man complex, where you think I need to be very, very powerful to assert my enemies. And who was the real enemy? It was the bully on the playground. You know, I would get in fights frequently with very tall underclassmen because they wanted to, you know, prove to them that they could beat up an upperclassman. And so I would have to constantly be in this fight or flight type of situation. And the fantasy that came into my mind, and I want you to know, first of all, it comes from a religious perspective, was to destroy communism. Okay, I was brought up religious, where we would salute the flag in church, where we would pledge allegiance to the flag and to our country. We would salute the soldiers that were in the church. And, you know, the pastor said something that was really significant. It's a scripture from the Old Testament. He says, well, today, if we fought wars like God wants us to, then we would do what God says. And here's what God says: to destroy our enemies, to kill their women, their children, their cattle, burn their crops, and bash their babies' brains against the rocks. Now, that might not be word for word, but it's there.
it's in a lot of, I've read some of the Quran and you know, the infidels and some, you know, it's pretty prevalent in a lot of the religions, even in Hinduism, the Ramana Pratha, where Arjuna was the war hero. Anyway, he's encouraged to, the whole thing is about why he's basically justifying the war and why you know, it's okay to fight. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty prevalent.
And so I had this concept that God hated, and God hated the enemies of God. And who was that? And if you went to my church, the enemies of God were homosexuals. They were Muslims. They were communists. They were atheists, you know, and even liberals. I mean, you could just say liberals in general supported those other groups. And so they were evil in the sight of God. And homeless people, as a matter of fact, people who wouldn't work.
So essentially, you joined the military then out of like an altruistic idea, like you wanted to, it was a noble cause to defend the country against some kind of, maybe not evil, but I guess you would be able to say evil, right? In that case. I mean, at least from your perspective at that time, you think?
I considered those groups that I just mentioned to be evil in the sight of God, that God hated them. And that I didn't personally hate them, okay? It wasn't like I personally hated them. I didn't sit there and plot to kill those groups. However, I got this wild notion that I could end world communism. And how was I going to do that? I was going to fly a glider with a nuclear bomb attached into the Kremlin under the cover of, you know, being launched, you know, off of the back of an aircraft, and it was going to glide into the Kremlin, and I was going to blow up the Kremlin. That was going to end world communism.
I think you would have been, that would have been from the orders of a general or your superior, right? It's kind of an idea that you had, that you, your rogue element at that point.
I was manifesting it. At 14 years old, I was flying airplanes. I would throw 3 paper routes a day. I lived 20 miles away from where George Bush Jr. grew up. I would, in fact,
By the way, I want to go on record saying I'm not related to George Bush. But my family, our last name is Bucci, B-U-C-C-I, and they changed it to Bush. No relation. Okay. Cool.
So, I mean, I was literally brought up in the same us versus them, you know, mentality, and very competitive out in West Texas. And we were very competitive with sports, just with everything. Everything was a competition between me and you, and me being good and you being bad. And the town next to me was the evil town, and we were the good town. I mean, and I'm sure that they felt the same exact way about us. It's the way that our culture is set up, and that we are extremely competitive. We compete with each other. But I was brought up thinking that I needed to be on the good team. What's the good team? Team America, right? The, you know, apple pie, John Wayne, you know, with the, you know, paratroopers, you know, with John Wayne out there with the green berets. I mean, I remember singing that song, fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the green beret. And so, you, in this type of environment, is what I grew up in, watching Vietnam on television. I was, you know, I understood what war was, and I understood that we were the good guys, they were the bad guys. So I became a pilot when I was 14 years old, and that's the youngest you can possibly do it. I would pay for my flying lessons by throwing 3 newspaper routes a day, rode my motorcycle. And then when I was 15, I flew by myself. I flew solo. And in fact, my instructor would bring the adults out to watch this kid land, because I would crab into the wind and right at the very last second, drop in for a perfect 3-point landing, you know, touchdown, boom. And so I was just really good, because I rode motorcycles and bicycles and skateboards, and you know, everything up to that point was something that I was very good at. And so I was like a perfect tool to be used for what I was planning. Now, what I would plan was this going into the Kremlin, but how it manifested was it was a progression. You know, first of all, I started off with flying airplanes across my room, and then it moved up to drawing little picture graphs on papers where you flip the pages, and then I would fly these missions. And then I got my pilot's license, and then I joined the military. And I couldn't get into the regular flight school in the military because I was so anxious to get to flying that I found out that you could go through the Army and get into a flight school and actually get into military operations where you are, you know, covert. And so I'm manifesting what my beliefs are. They are manifesting right in front of me. I go into the military. I was in military intelligence. We were preparing to go to war with Iran, very similar to what we are right this very minute. And that was World War III. I mean, I know that a lot of people think that going to war with Iran is going to be like Iraq. They have no idea how big a difference the difference is going to be. I mean, we're talking about the end of probably civilization. And yet, you know, that's what we were planning. And this is where I am. I was very good at my job. I was the very best at identifying military equipment and in my occupation. I was still doing the wargaming. But during this time, there was a setback, and I spent about 6 months just destroying documents for the military. And during that time, I had what I would call a precursor to my near-death experience. I was in this isolated room, and I felt my soul leave my body. Now, it zoomed to outer space.
So you had an out-of-body experience.
Yeah. You know, where I would describe the other ones as being flying dreams, but they weren't really, you know, flying it, but they were, you know, flying around my neighborhood. This was very different. I zoomed out to outside the atmosphere. I looked, turned around and looked down, and I saw the earth, big blue marble earth, you know, right above it. And then I just zoomed back in. So, you know, this is several months before my near-death experience, but it was, again, I felt like all these things are, you know, this wasn't under any kind of stress. This is just something that happened.
You definitely saw the earth as a sphere. I know some people out there are like, you know, exploring the idea that maybe the earth is flat. And even I have this questions about maybe it being a holograph. And so it could be a flat holograph. But you didn't see like any kind of holographic, you just saw like a basically a sphere. And that's what the earth was from what you saw.
You know, with water and land and mountains and rivers and, you know, it was just, you know, earth. You know, I could see the Great Lakes and I could see the Gulf, and I could see, you know, the California Baja Peninsula. I could see, I mean, that's the perspective I saw it from was I saw it the way I saw it. I mean, it was just earth. Around. Okay. But I'm not, what's interesting is that, you know, why did I do it? I mean, why was that, something that I did? Now let's advance, fast forward just a little bit. We are, you know, the Soviet Union had collapsed. There was no Soviet Union. We didn't have a mission, the military. I mean, we were literally picking up cigarette butts. That's what we were doing before we created this new mission. Now, we had this meeting, and we had to sign papers that said we wouldn't talk about it for 20 years. And in this meeting we had, there were two gentlemen there. Now, to call them gentlemen probably not true. They were from a think tank, and they were giving us a new mission. And the new mission was to completely destroy the will to fight amongst the Muslim people. Now, this is before we had Iraq. You know, this is before we had all the, you know, the terrorist attacks. You know, there were some minor things that had happened up to that point. However, this was the beginning of that, okay? At this point, over in Iran, our embassy was taken siege by some Muslim terrorists. And it's interesting how not, how non-aggressive they were. I mean, they just seemed to be baiting Ronald Reagan into getting into office. It seemed like they really didn't want to kill anybody. And we ended up actually sending some Marines in there that did die just from their aircraft failure. But it was just a terrible time for, you know, what was to come. And we had no idea that this little skirmish that we had with Iran was going to basically send, you know, at this point, millions of soldiers from America and all over the world into combat against Muslim people in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other countries over there. And they're all over, they're everywhere, you know. But the thing that he said is, we are going to destabilize every single Muslim nation. And these two guys did. And from the think tank. And that we are going to create, we are going to do lesser evil to prevent a greater evil. Now, what was that lesser evil? It was to destabilize their countries by pitting them one against another. In other words, your enemy is, if your enemy is my enemy, then you're my friend. And so we would basically, right. And don't get me wrong. They're doing the same thing to us. Okay. So I'm not giving the Russians and the, Chinese, you know, a buy on this. Okay. Not even the Iranians. Okay. I'm not giving anybody a buy, but I'm just saying that we're doing that. And whenever you say America's doing that, if you go back 30 years ago, most Americans thought we were the good guys. I don't think that's the case anymore. I don't believe that most Americans believe that. I think most Americans believe that we are doing what we're doing to protect our oil interest and our allies. And it's exactly what they told us. We're going to be protecting the corporate interest of the United States, and we're going to be protecting our allies in the Middle East and creating this new mission, but that we were not going to lose another war. And the way we were going to do that is by changing the way reporters reported, that we were going to no longer just send in reporters that can go willy-nilly and report whatever they want to. And so they basically bought the media. And then, this is really interesting, they said, we're going to change the way the universities teach. And they created money. They financed grants. They financed professors. They financed research for individuals who would not say that, you know, that would be, they call it objective. They call it objective reporting. And so they would never, ever say that what we were doing was just wrong. It's just wrong for you to, you know, murder a country's president and then invade them, because that was against the rules. So what they would do was change the language of how things were said and always have a bias towards the United States. And there's nothing wrong with that if you're doing good. However, at some point I realized that nobody's doing good. Okay.
Yeah, the term freedom fighter or terrorist, just it depends on which side of the equation you're on, I guess, your perspective.
Right. In Vietnam, they had a body count. In Iraq, it was collateral damage. Okay. You know, we changed the way we talked about how we kill people, and we don't report the amount of people killed, for instance. You know, if the wheels are off the ground in Iraq and they're headed to Germany, they're not going to be counted as killed in combat. They're going to be considered dying, in active duty. I mean, you got to look at things that it's about hearts and minds. And to win the hearts and minds, they don't have to be good guys. They just have to create the possibility that we were doing something that we had to, a lesser evil, to prevent a greater evil. And so then you have, you know, the television shows. So programming, television shows, marketing, children's toys, video games, that were all created to create an illusion that it's necessary to respond to evil with evil, but with greater evil, not just with return eye for an eye, but to return an eye with a devastating, gigantic hammer that destroys not just you, but your neighbors and your family and the random person that happened to be walking by, and that's okay. And I believed it was okay at the time. However, I had something that I call cognitive dissonance. Whenever they said that we're going to do a lesser evil to prevent a greater evil, I said in my mind, that makes us evil. It only lasted for 1 second, you know, that moment, that cognitive dissonance, that changing, wow, that means that we're evil. And once you agree to do
it,
but evil is evil.
Yeah, right.
And once you agree to be evil, it's really incredible what you're willing to do. Once you agree that you're evil and you have to go from that perspective.
You bought into the program at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I bought little targets with Khomeini on them and all the other, the bad guys. Okay. And we would say things like nuke them till they glow, turn Iran into a sea of glass. And we sang these horrible, awful songs. We're going to rape, kill, pillage, burn. We're going to rape, kill, pillage, burn, and eat babies. And then we sang all these songs. We triumphed over being evil. I mean, we not triumphed over it. We became that.
I would imagine some of the raping and stuff like that probably did go on. Hopefully there weren't any killing of babies. But
well, not at that time. What happened in that time was, I don't know. I can tell you that some big, gigantic forces stopped us from going into Iran. And I want to say that something happened. We did not go. There were sane minds at that time. And part of it is because that's the end of the game. Once you say we're going into Iran, you're saying this is World War III. It's game over. You know, everybody has to go play a different game somewhere else. And so I think that whatever forces there were out there that were manifesting this great, gigantic battle that we were going to begin with Iran, that was going to end with China and Russia and the United States all at each other's throats, was heading headlong. We were heading headlong into that. I mean, nobody really knows how close we came.
And had you flown your plane into the Kremlin or something, that would have definitely triggered something like World War III, right? So they had to maybe keep that from happening, right? You think a greater power kind of intervened?
You know, I don't think I was going to fly that glider into that Kremlin. I think I was definitely caught up in destroying communism. I was definitely caught up in destroying liberal ideas. I mean, we would sit there and talk about when Bill Clinton was out of office, that it was going to be free game on the liberals and that we were going to literally round them up. And it was going to be looked the other way because the liberals are now dead. And that was what we were really talking about in the military. And I'm not talking about officially. It was unofficial, but that was our muhaha. We're going to get it.
Do you still have like that partisan perspective, or now do you kind of evolve to the point where you think both sides are, you know, the two sides of the same coin and they're kind of played off against each other?
Absolutely. And once you understand that every single bit of that tension is a big chess game, then you get the idea that they literally, every time they pit one human being against another human being through their intellectual beliefs, through their political belief, their religious belief, or just, you know, what town you live in, or whatever culture. I believed the Catholics were evil. I believed that people that weren't my exact religion were evil. I mean, once you get to that place of absolutism, you can do a lot of things. And I believe that I was amongst a lot of individuals who believed like I did. We were heading headlong into World War III in Iran. I mean, literally moving that way. And we were going there, and I was joining them. I was all for it. I mean, I thought, well, we're going to eliminate Iran. We're going to eliminate Russia. We're going to nuke China into oblivion. I believed that, but I didn't believe it because of, it was a realistic viewpoint, but I believe that God was on our side.
That is one of my favorite songs by Bob Dylan, God on Our Side.
Sure. Yes. I mean, it didn't matter. And you have political leaders at that time who were basically saying the same thing. I mean, that God was on our side and we were going to go against the evil empire. I mean, that was later on, but basically the same concepts. And I was getting ready. I was going to a mission. I was going on a mission to go to a planning for going to war in Iran. That's where I was in my little car, in my little MGB. And I got distracted because I was supposed to meet this girl, and we were going to have a kiss. That was it, just a promise of a kiss. And so I never made it there because I was railroaded literally off of the main road. I was going through a road, a storm, massive storm, and in my little car, and I had to get to the base.
Somebody ran you off the road, or what happened?
Well, I don't know about somebody, but something. Something did something. I was going down the road, and the literal sign that was saying to go to Fort Wayne was flapping in the wind, and the rain was coming down so harshly that I couldn't see the sign.
It kind of reminds me of the movie The Truman Show when the storm starts coming.
So I'm literally I didn't know which road to choose, and so I went to the right, the far right. If that makes any sense. And I was going down this road called Double S Road, and a flash flood comes through and washes my vehicle off the road. And I died in a field outside of Toledo, Ohio.
I think I'm I know this must be awful hard for you to live all these experiences. It's gotten very painful, but I can't tell you how appreciative I am for you to share this with everyone. And hopefully we can make a difference in some people's lives or help them understand this crazy world we're living in a little better.
Well, I died. My body went through glass, through the windshield, through the side windows. To this day, I have glass still coming out of my body from 30 years ago. And
what happened? Did you left your body and you could see your body from above? Or did you see a tunnel on a light, or did you just go straight to it? Can you step us through that?
Well, I was going through the windshield, and I had a life review. I saw my whole life from the very beginning of my...
So your life review happened before you even went to the light or to the tunnel? You saw your life pass before your eyes.
Yeah. And so I saw every beautiful, wonderful, awesome, loving, kind, joyful moment of my entire life flash before my eyes. And
you didn't see any of the negativity?
It was there. It was just like fast forwarded past, like it wasn't important.
The positive, good things stood out.
They they were the only important things. It was as if I was getting if you'll, you know, a little bit later, you'll see it was like my defense documents. You know, I was saying, hey, what did you do? What did you do for the earth? What did you do for mankind? What did you do for God?
Okay, so, but when you died in the car, did you have an out of body where you could look back and see your body, or did you see a tunnel form or anything like that?
I was outside my body, and I looked as if from an omniscient point of view, I would be, you know, maybe 10 feet away, and I could move in a little closer or a little bit further back to see things. And I would see important moments in my life. You know, certain moments were just fast forwarded past, like working. Sure there were. I mean, I knew they were there, but I mean, I was in the driver's seat here, you know? And I mean, like, you know, things that weren't important, eating, pooping, you know, sex was not important. Okay. You know, just bodily function stuff, working just to pay for your bills, things like that. I mean, now there were moments of work where I was with somebody, where I interacted with them. But mostly it was beautiful scenery that I had seen. When my grandparents were with me, they were, you know, going fishing with them. Just these moments of sharing with just other people, talking gently with others. It was just like, it wasn't these big old huge things that you would think. It was like the beautiful moments that you have in your life. There were meetings that you have with others that, you know, should have given you a hint, you know, but they didn't, you know, maybe they didn't. I don't know why I was only shown what was important and not delve on the negative. Maybe that's going to happen when I go back next time. I don't know.
Were they deemed important? Were they not like personal accomplishments? Like, you know, you maybe when you shot a basketball game or something, it was more like, you know, when you helped somebody out or those kind of things?
Or you know, considering you're coming from a selfish person who just basically lived for himself, maybe, you know, very close to being a, you know, psychopath or a sociopath or a narcissist. I mean, as somebody who lived literally just to kill people. I mean, that was my...
Are you describing yourself in that manner?
Well, at that point, I mean, if you look back on my life,
Yeah, but you got into it because of a noble cause. Like, you thought it was God's will, and then you really wanted to help do the right thing, right? That doesn't sound too psychopathic, though. It was a slowly thing you became immersed into that mentality.
If it was so wonderful, why wasn't it in my good things that happened in my life? Every single moment of me plotting to scheme and kill people was not there. Not one second of it. I mean, it was like that wasn't important. In fact, it was meaningless. It was garbage, just like the going to the potty. That's how worthless it was. And what was important was kindness, compassion, mercy, love, joy. What wasn't important was me planning and plotting and scheming to kill for God, and all my thoughts about how evil the Catholics were, and how evil the Muslims were, and how evil the communists were, and how evil. Not one thought of that was there in the things that I took with me to the light.
That's interesting.
So I take this little package of things that I had done that actually were positive, you know, love, kindness, mercy, compassion. Love, and love, I don't mean like love you have with your favorite gal or girl, but I'm talking about, and that was there too, but it was not sensual. It's like if you have a kind moment with your girlfriend, then that's fine. It's going to be there, but it's not what most of.
Or altruistic kind of love, sacrificial type of stuff?
No, all love makes it. It's just that some love really isn't love. You know what I mean? Some love is just, it's just a drive, like a sex drive or something like that. That kind of, it's not, and that's, but love between people anywhere, any kind of anything between you and your dog, or even you and your guitar, or you and your whatever, it's there. You know, I mean, all kinds of love is there. It's just, people think, well, there's this agape love, you know, and that's the only kind of love that makes it to, no, it's all love, all of it. And it, if it's attached to kindness, mercy, compassion, love is love. Okay.
There wasn't any light at this point. You hadn't gotten
the light. No, I had not. At that point, I went into the darkness. And it was dark.
Darkness like outer space, or was it just darkness?
I felt like there was a surface, and I was standing on it, even though I couldn't see, like a surface. I felt like I was literally in the darkest place you could possibly imagine.
You just all of a sudden find yourself there. You didn't, see it and said, oh, that was supposed to be, I'm going to go there. Or you just all of a sudden you were in darkness?
I had my life review, and I went back into my body, and I got banged around. My car is rolling along in the field, and then I got thrown into this place. So it's almost like I went out of my body, I came back in, crunch, 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 blood, guts, pain, agony, and then.
So what happened in the darkness?
I looked around, I had a sense of looking around, and I knew I didn't want to be there. I knew that.
Was it a scariness, or did you really feel at peace? Or
Nah, there was no love there. Okay, love is something that once you know what it really is, you can't fake it. And there's no faking it. I mean, I just had my life review. I know what love was because I just saw it. You know what I mean? I know what love is. I just saw my little 10 minutes of love that I had in 21 years of life. You know what I mean? It wasn't much. You know what I mean? So here I am. I've just seen it. Just right before my eyes. This is it. This is what love is. And now I'm in the darkness. And there's none here. No love here. Okay. So I'm looking around. There's no love to be found. And there's nothing. I mean, people get homesick. What are they homesick for? They're for those moments, those little bitty blips of moments that we have with our loved ones, those moments that we had with our special friend, that time we had with our dog,
So that was the place you wanted to stay for any extended period of time, like the darkness.
Well, I looked up. Just like that time whenever I was hiding under my sheets and looking at the crack underneath the door, and here I am again, back to 4 years old, and calling out to something in my sleep. God, I was praying to God, and God was,
you start praying to God in the darkness?
When I was four, I did. And that gave me comfort. It was like there was somebody there watching over me. And it was definitely a masculine feeling at that point when I was four. When I'm 21 or 20, what was I looking for? Heck, I was dead. I wasn't looking for anything. I just died. I hadn't even figured out that I was dead yet. But I did look up. Okay. And looked up and behind me. Okay. So I remember looking up and behind me.
So it was behind you. You would look straight up. You wouldn't have seen the light. You had it like.
I think so. I twisted.
Granted,
I want you to know I had a broken neck down on the ground and there wasn't no turning it. Okay. But spiritually, I turned my neck.
You had an astral body maybe at this point? Or whatever.
Something. Yeah, I would call it an astral body. That sounds like a good fit. So I turned around and looked. And up above me, there was this little bitty window of light.
A little pinpoint?
No, like a little window. Imagine a window real far away. It wasn't round. It was like a little rectangle. Okay. Way, way, way far away. And wow, now that reminded me of my little package of love that I had, you know, that I'd just seen. That was it. You know, my little sum of who I am. And just like Superman, I kind of like stuck my arms forward and I didn't see them because it was so dark. And then behind me, and I started lifting my chin up, I don't see a chin, but I felt like I was lifting up my chin and turning towards the light. And then I started floating up, not just like really slow, but kind of quickly. But while I was going up,
do you think it was because of your desire to go before that you started?
You know, that same feeling when I was a child, when I was flying, my will.
Because you said you were like thrown into the dark, but just you weren't thrown into the light. It seemed like this was your
own. I don't remember actually like landing. I was just there. I was out of my body. Bam! I'm in the dark. What I believe is the bottom of wherever I am. Okay. Some people want to call that place hell. If it is, it ain't that bad.
But you didn't start going to the light until you like turned around, saw it was there, mm-hmm. and maybe had possibly a desire to go towards it.
Well, I knew I wanted to go there. Okay. When you're looking around you and there's no love whatsoever, nothing, and you're thinking, this is not where I want to be.
You didn't feel the presence of any other beings in that
room. No. I didn't. But then as I started going up, I started actually seeing stuff. Imagine this, as I'm going up and around me, first of all, we're talking about absolute darkness. Okay. Now we're talking about some dark brown, some dark, deep, dark purple, some deep, deep, dark greens. And okay. Imagine that you're at the bottom of a snow cone. You know, a cup, like pointed up, inverted. And you're in the snow cone and it's twirling around you. Okay? Like a vortex. I think of it as a washing machine because it seemed like the further I got up, the further, the lighter it became. So I was kind of like rinsing off layers of darkness, spirits, things like that. And it felt like that was happening. I was getting.
Do you think that's the tunnel that the near-death experience should
be over? You know what? That's kind of, I went in a tunnel. Yeah. I mean, other experiences have said the same thing. I really don't read other people's experiences because I don't, you know, for me to say, well, it's like other people said, but you know, honestly, I try to stick to people that just tell me their personal experiences and nobody's really experienced what I experienced. I mean, they've had similar things. But not the same thing. I mean, it's just, I think that, we get what we're allowed to get. It's almost as if it's they're giving you more information for you to work with for later on. Why? Because they got reasons for it. They need you, obviously, to be back here. And you know now that I do come back because I'm talking on this radio show. But as I got further and further up, yes, I feel beings, something around me on the way up as it gets lighter.
You just feel them, you know, maybe see some lights, the colored lights, but you didn't see faces or.
You know what? If I think on it, yes, but it was like that wasn't important. It's like they're out in the peripheral.
You think these are souls that didn't go to the light or maybe they're trapped? I mean, any ideas looking back on it?
You know, this is pure speculation at this point. I'm going to say what I think. Okay, I think there are spirits that are attached to us. They're not our soul. Our soul is this impenetrable, perfect egg. You know, it's impervious, indestructible, filled full of light. That same substance that I saw in my little 10-minute blip. It's made out of that. But this little thing you can't hurt. But I think that as I got further, some of those dark, less loving things started coming off of this egg that I was.
You might describe them more like entities and maybe those are the archons that people probably
knew. Archons. You know, I don't know. I just think that that we go through our life with all kinds of misunderstandings, misperceptions, stereotypes. They cling on to us, but they don't stay on us because they're not relevant to the light, to this love thing that I just saw. They weren't relevant to that. Things that weren't relevant. And there's, inside of every intention, there's even like multiple intentions. You know, I like you and I want to take you on a date, but really I want to have sex with you. You know, I mean, there's like multiple intentions inside of every intention.
Okay, so you're going towards the light at this point?
Yeah, I'm going up. And so I get up to, I mean, like I said, it gets swirling and the light gets lighter, 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 lighter. And then I just go boom right through this door. And when you get through this door, there ain't no, it's intense.
It's the door of light?
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine you're going through it. Imagine there's a sun.
There's a rectangle.
Yeah, like a tall rectangle, you know, with the sides being, more narrow than the, like a door.
And so this wasn't the sun or anything like that. It went through like a door of light.
No, it was a dark on the outsides of it, and it was flat, and I went in. Okay. And so I went in, and I'm talking about, if you were talking about the sun though, imagine there's a sun right on the other side of a dark door and the light couldn't get through, and it's brighter than the sun. It's like 10 suns or more, you know, it's brilliant light, but I wasn't seeing through my eyes at this point. I was literally seeing through the center of myself, and everything was so bright. Imagine 1,000 shades of light and one little shadow. Of a line that just would help you with make out something's in the room. You know, this is a room because there's the least little bit of shade difference over here.
Why were you thinking to yourself at this point? Like, holy crap, all this experience I'm having, you're just like blown away by it all? You remember what you're going through your mind?
Yeah, there was this light was blasting through me. Imagine there's, the light is so intense that it's burning, right? Not burning, not like a physical burning, but imagine that on the other side of you is it's the light's just going through you.
Did you feel like intense love at this point?
Yeah. It was awesome. The love was, funny, happy, glad, joy, just like, wow, my child has arrived. You know, cool.
My child. So you think you say this light would be a being? Then is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know it at that point. I just felt like somebody really loved me. You know, I imagine that little bitty 10 minutes of film that I have way back when, and this being was full of all of that. Not just my little 10 minutes of everything, but every bit of light that there is.
The door of light was a game, or you went through a door of light, and light in that light.
Yeah, yeah.
You think this being is God, or?
You know, I'm.
You're not comfortable with that word then?
I'm really not. You want to know the God I grew up with? It wasn't that. You know what I mean? If you want to call God.
Is this the mirror you're talking about?
No. I mean, this was the light. The light was love. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people say God is love. They don't believe it for a second, but they say it. God is love. Oh, even when God's spanking you and making you die from an aneurysm, God is love. Oh, when you just were in a car crash, God is love. No.
So the being didn't really, like, identify himself or say, like, I'm God or I'm Jesus or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I just felt this being's love, and I just knew that it was the sum of all love. I knew that. Like, this was all of it. I mean, I was a little bitty, tiny little cell size of love, but this was all of it. I mean, if you can.
Just light, or as far as you can see, everything was light at this point.
Lots of light. Okay, but then.
The beings of light,
right? Well, there one popped up right beside me. I mean, after I got over the light blasting through me and start looking around a little bit. There was a, as soon as I looked away from it at all, things got, you know, it was still light, but it wasn't like blasting light, you know, and I'm looking to my right and here's this ball of light right there. It's, you know, and I can't see any feet or legs. So I mean to say how big it is. I can't, there's no sense of measurement. Okay. I mean, I don't know how big it was, but it looked like a ball of light and there it was. And it was a ball of light and it was there. And it was like,
so you hadn't seen any of your loved ones at this point, like no mother, father, or anybody's passed on? Or
if I did, I went right past them.
Yeah.
Okay, I felt like I went to a pretty high place. Wherever I went was pretty much past all of the lower densities.
So this lesser being of light, smaller being of light, this orb of light, that this new orb, did it talk to you?
Well, first of all, you call the larger light an orb. I can't call it that. I didn't even see it. I mean, it was so intense, I couldn't even look at it. I had to look, you know, I had to turn my head just to keep from looking at it because it was so brilliant. You know, it's like looking at the sun from 10 feet away. Would you do it? You know, I mean, it's just, you can't see anything if you're looking straight into it. And so I turned my head, saw this orb of light up off the deck there. I knew there was a deck, I could tell. This being, you know, just kind of like communicates to me to come with him. And I say him because, well, you know, telepathy, I say,
heart to heart or something.
Whatever you want to call it, something, you know, we were, you know, telepathy just seems like a misuse of the word. I don't know how to describe it. My intentions, I knew its intentions. Telepathy is, you don't think of it as, I mean, I knew this being's heart, its intentions, is what it meant, and it was really apparent that it was here for me. And this being said, "Let's," you know, basically didn't say, but just hinted that we need to go to this room. Okay, and so we went into this cavernous like place. Inside of this cavern, it's like really cloudy, and I notice in here that there's pinks and yellows light, like almost like being in a Not exactly like a seashell, but something like that. You know, it's like these pinks and yellows, mostly, and then white. So it's like cloudy, pinkish, yellowish. But it's, you know, you can see the flat floor, but on either side, for as far as you can see, are these alcoves, like arches. You have an archway, and you go in, and you, when you're passing by them, you'll see like a, you know, like at a church, they have a little bitty, stand, you know, pulpit, right? And, there'd be a pulpit and there'd be, like a book there. And I say like a book because it wasn't really like a bound book. It's different, but you could see them and they would start, you could start kind of like knowing what they were. And inside of this,
like some kind of holographic display, like
a
holodeck or something like that.
No, it was real. I mean, you know, whenever you say holodeck and you're thinking of, well, is this a representation of it? It didn't feel that way. And it seemed solid, even though it was cloudy and everything. Man, I mean, it wasn't like a, you know, it was just too real. There were subtleties, you know. When you think of a holodeck, you're thinking of crisp lines, no blurred, you know, everything is crisp, but not here. What was in this room was a 3D recording of every single soul's light, every single spirit's light. In other words, there's spirits and there's souls. And I thought of my human soul, but I also just thought of sometimes there's something that is even is inanimate that might have
spirit of love or forgiveness, that kind of thing.
No, I'm just talking about like your guitar, you know, like if something was loved, then it had love. If there was a crystal that was loved, then it has love. If there was I don't know. It seemed like even inanimate objects had some kind of something. But every little insect, every little frog, every tree, every every animal, every creature, every human. And they were all like had a little recording of their existence from the beginning.
On Earth, their existence on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, on Earth. And I'm not saying that there aren't other places like this for other places. I'm just saying I saw what was literally the entire history and future of every single being, thing, anything that had. Now, this is like the rated PG version, okay? Or PG-13 or whatever you want to call it, because there's inside of this hall, there's none of that ugliness. Okay. None of it. It's all been adjusted through a filter of love.
Sanitized or something like that.
Sanitized with love. I mean, like what's left in love? Because if you look inside of every intention you've ever had in your whole life, if you're human, you probably had two intentions. One of them's your selfish intention. One is your loving intention. You can do two things at the same time. And one intention might stick out a little bit. But the other one might be back there. And a lot of people even do bad things thinking they're doing something good somehow. And so, but the main thing is the intention was forward, loving intention and kindness, joy, mercy, compassion, love, loving kindness.
Did you by any chance experience like your past, like did you become aware that you had many lives and that you could know what those were?
Yeah, I got to see one in particular that, you know, I was, you know, it sounds kind of hokey, but I was a pilot, you know, and I had the complete understanding that I was a German pilot in World War II who shot down Allied aircraft, the Americans and British. As a young man, you know, I had flying dreams. I fantasized about flying. I, you know, had astral projection, whatever you want to call it. I had a near-death experience. Whatever it is you want to call it, I had a, you know, flying was something innately attached to who I am. And I had this understanding. And now I want to, you know, people say, you have past lives. But it's kind of like that 10-minute blip. I just had this 10-minute blip of things he was working on. You know what I mean? And the 10-minute blip, I saw him. He killed a whole lot of people. Allied bomber pilots mostly. Not just the pilots, their crew members. He never did shoot anybody in a parachute. I know that. So he had some sense of nobility, if you want to call it that. But it killed hundreds and hundreds of people. Nighttime, a lot of nighttime missions, but also daytime missions. And he was very good at shooting down the bombers because he had real good eyesight. He could see real far away, just like I can. I can't see worth a darn up close, but I can see for miles and miles and miles.
This sounds very similar to the life that you just had. I mean, like it sounds like something out of Holocaust where you keep coming back and trying to do the same thing over until you get it right, almost, you know.
I think there's something to that. Yeah. And anyway, and he had a wife and a daughter, and he totally ignored them. He was just loved flying, and he did. And he first got into the flying, and he could fly. It's like religion. Religion puts this little sweet thing in front of you and calls it God and says God loves you. And says, come to this little bitty light. And it loves you. And it's sweet. And then it piles on top of you dogma. I'm talking about hatred, competition. That my religion's better than your religion. I mean, anyway, he wanted to fly just like I did it when I was 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, joining the military, flying aircraft. And I would do anything for it. this German pilot would do anything to fly. And if you're a German in World War II, you believe that you, a God is on your side, and you believe in your country, and you believe that that is more important than your own family, your own children.
So this was you in this life, you were a German pilot?
And that you're talking about a past life.
Yeah.
And to say it was a past life, I mean, I don't know. You know, people are, I think they use that past life thing too strongly. I think that we get little pieces of lives. We don't live their whole life. If we remember their whole life, then we could go back and backtrack to every little thing they ever did. But it was more like that little 10-minute blip. But it wasn't just the positive stuff here. So anyway, I had this understanding that this German pilot had an aha moment. Okay. He gets jumped by an American aircraft from behind, and the bullets start flying through his back and neck. And he goes, good, it's over. He was sick of the war. He was sick of the killing. And I understood it clearly, you know, that he was sick of it. And he had done a lot of killing, ignored his family, ignored the important stuff. Also, he could fly aircraft. And, you know, I got that. And I don't even know where that actually comes in. And I believe that I was shown that.
I'm not interested that you don't necessarily consider it a past life, but if it was a past life, I mean, it seems like you didn't learn a lesson. I mean, like, if he had those bullets go through him and he's like, oh, finally it's over. But yet in this life, you didn't say, oh, I don't like war. I'm not going to go to war. You know what I'm saying?
I was headlong going in the same direction.
Right. You don't think you remember those thoughts that he had in your life then?
Not before that time. You know, before that moment. I mean, I look at it as I was just doing the same exact thing. I just did it from a different flag.
This is kind of one of the, you know, reincarnation explains a lot of things for me. Like if a child prodigy can play a piano at 5 years old, maybe, you know, he practiced for years and years, you know, different lifetimes doing that. So this, and it kind of explains the riddle of inequality and injustice. But it would seem like if it's a real phenomenon and it's purposeful, then you would hope that you would have learned that lesson, right? So you come back in this life and you wouldn't go through, you would remember all lives, right? You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know.
Well, I just think I was manifesting something really, really bad. More than just shooting down a few airplanes. You know, I think I got sidetracked, pushed, whatever you want to call it, off that main road to have my meeting with God.
Yeah, and, you know, I've read like a lot of books like, you know, Michael Newton, where he takes clients into, you know, he's a hypnotherapist, and he's discovered, you know, they take clients into past lives, but he discovered like an in-between life state where, you know, you go to your soul group and you review your previous life and what went wrong and how you can learn lessons and everything. But he says he has this one client that it took him 400,000 years to overcome jealousy. You know, for many, many other lifetimes. He said he's intolerant as hell now, but he's overcome jealousy. And so is that the case that it just takes us many, 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 many lifetimes to overcome things like that?
You know, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
All right. I think I'd be going too far forward.
Okay. Go on with where you're at here. And so you saw, well, at least one other lifetime that you think was yours, right?
Well, I looked like me.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he looked just like me. Yeah. I'm not saying he was me, okay. But he sure as heck looked like me, you know.
Okay, so what happened next then?
Okay, so I'm going through this rooms, you know, and I'm realizing that the sum, I mean, I don't know if you can understand the gravity of what I'm saying. That every bug, fly, mosquito, you know, if you go down that track, has a life, okay? And what the... Well, spirit. Well, a soul, I don't know. I mean, you can call it a soul if you want. I mean, I didn't get the sense of that, but I got, at least they had a spirit. And it wasn't evil or dark or whatever, but in this place, everything had a purpose. You know, every bug, tree, rock, you know, grain of sand. I mean, if you go down small enough, you get down to the molecular level. And every molecule inside of a grain of sand have their own consciousness. You know, every molecule is like an entity unto itself. Okay. And outside of that, you know, we're a part of something bigger than that. You know, I mean, but it depends on how far out you go. Then you start realizing that everything in this room was part of one thing. You know, you've heard of oneness, but I mean, literally, I mean, imagine if you were to take the entire earth, and I did see this later. I can describe it right now, though. And this is something that now you called him a demiurge, and I can relate to that. But he showed me what that was. The entire earth is an organism, like a plant. And every molecule affects every other molecule, especially the influence right around them is important. Okay, like the person right next to you, the cat, the dog, the plant that you have in your apartment.
You're in this cavernous place at this point, or was this later somewhere else?
Later on, but you asked me, and I think it was later. Okay, but I saw how everything influences everything else. I mean, everything is a part of this one organic being, you know, and that organic being is Earth. It's like you've heard of Mother Earth. Well, I mean, I didn't get that masculine feminine thing out of the Earth, but what I did get was that it was an organic being, like a plant with its own consciousness. Okay, just like your arm has its own intentions. Different, completely different than your tongue, right? Their thoughts are completely different. I mean, if you were to take them individually, what is it that works for your tongue isn't working for your hand. Sometimes they meet and work together. However, that's the way the earth was. It was like everything has its role, it's what it's doing. And, anyway. I want to move on from there, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so if you understand the gravity of how many of these books there are, like imagine, I mean...
3D books you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, if you just count there's like trillions, literally trillions of cockroaches, you know? I mean, if you just start there, right? And mosquitoes and...
Each soul or whatever has its own book?
Everything. Imagine there's a book of life for every molecule. I mean, you got to get pretty daggum. You got to expand your mind to a place where it can't go. You know, where a human mind just is going to run out. You're going to run out of possible. I mean, you know, they say the computers are getting bigger and bigger, and so they store more and more and more and more. But just imagine the capacity of recording the entire life of every single molecule from the beginning to the end, and it's stored. And not only has it been stored, it's been edited at this point in the light. Okay.
Edited in is the bad stuff. It's kind of...
Right. Well, whatever you want to call bad.
Right.
Bad's the wrong word to use, but
yeah.
Anything not related to kindness.
Insignificant.
Yeah, insignificant.
It doesn't matter.
Right. And there's a core substance. Now, something I didn't see. I didn't see any insects in heaven. Okay, even though they were in these books, did see flowers, and I say didn't see insects, but I know darn well that there were butterflies. And
this is the seven that you're talking about at this point?
Huh?
You're talking about heaven?
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's
what
do you want to call heaven? I'll tell you what I think it is, and I saw it on the way out. It's like a square. It's like a big spaceship.
I'm just trying to differentiate. The heaven is not this cavernous place, right? You're
now
back to the cavernous place.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to the heaven part.
And you know, and I want to say something. There's no linear time there, So if I sound like I'm...
You didn't experience it? Like this happened and then this happened and then? It's more like it comes back and it's just all kind of oneness? Simultaneous?
No, I'm going to say what I'm going to stick... Let's go ahead and just... If you can help me with this, I'm going to work on through it. Okay? I'm going to work on... I'm in the cloud room. I'm made aware that every molecule has a purpose, okay? A loving purpose, all right? At least the ones in those books, all right? And you walk into these alcoves, and they just pop out, shh, you know? It's like, wow, you're living it. And so if you were to say reincarnation, if you were to experience that thing, you'd say, I lived it, because you're in it. You experience it just like you were there. Okay. So if you want to make a trip down and feel what Elvis Presley felt, I'm sure you could walk in there and check that out if that was really part of your purpose. Okay. I mean, apparently there's a bunch of people that think they're Elvis Presley, right?
Right.
Anyway, I'm sure that a lot of them took that journey, you know, at some point, and they really believe, right? But I saw what I saw, and what I saw was that they have all these alcoves, and inside of this ginormous, impossibly large, cloudy room is the history of, and the future, and the present of every living, organic thing, and then even some inorganic things. I mean, I hope you can understand that. Okay, so let's move back out. I'm getting my book. All right. So literally, I went to, like, imagine going.
But you said that you had experienced the Demiurge. So I'm trying to figure out, have you met the Demiurge?
No. Okay, so I am basically going to put my book on its rightful place. You know, kind of like touching base. Here is my book, and then I'm taking it with me, and I'm going to go meet what I'm going to find out, the light. Okay. And so I take my book, and this orb that's right beside me is like preparing me to go meet this thing. And so I'm going towards the light, and this is gigantic, doors. I mean, imagine, two, not those kind of knockers that they have on those old, doors, ornate, and this, like, doors are made out of, like, chopped, I want to say cedar, but it's not cedar, something like that. And I'm opening up these doors, right? But this being that's right beside me says, keep your head down.
That reminds me of the Bob Dylan song, Knocked on Heaven's Door. You actually could not. You hear about the gates of heaven.
Yeah. Well, this one, but this is very different from that light door that I went through. This is physical looking. In fact, you can't see through the light through it. You know what I mean? Of course, when you open the door back up, you look at, he told me to look down or I would die. And I mean, I understood him. Yeah, physically look down or you're going to die. And so I'm looking down, I'm looking over or off to the sides, you know, because I'm a curious guy, you know. And I'm seeing it's like I'm in a stadium. Looking off to my right, looking off to my left, and I'm going forward, and it feels like I'm on my knees, although there's no perception of that because I can't see my knees, don't see anything physical at all, and the light's just blasting through me, you know, but I feel like I'm moving forward and like I'm crawling or moving, hedging my way forward, at least lowering my head very low, and I'm looking off to my right, my left, and there's these gigantic pillars. I mean, huge pillars, and they're marble. They're marble pillars, but embedded in them is all these crystals, all these gems and rubies and sapphires of every kind you can imagine, and every one of those little bitty gems is talking. They have a little story. It's like these are their stories, and they're stored inside of these gigantic marble things, and they're talking and they're telling their story, It's really cool. But it was like, you know, yeah, that's cool. That's great. You know, but I couldn't really focus on them because I'm sitting there about to have my meeting with God. But, you know, and you even said it earlier, is it God? And I thought it was going to be God. I really did. I thought I'm about to meet God. And I'm going up there, and then I sense thousands and thousands and thousands of souls on either side of me, angels, whatever you want to call them.
They're in the stadium? Or just
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
In the stadium. They're like cheering me on.
That's a beautiful story.
It is. It's awesome. It's kind of like, wow, this is my moment to shine.
Right.
And all I got is my little bitty 10-minute film, you know? I mean, it ain't much, dude. It ain't.
They were cheering. Maybe they knew something you didn't know.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. Okay. So I got my little story to tell, right? You know, about riding motorcycles with my friend Deuce, you know, out in the field, and him sharing his motorcycle with me and me crashing into a tree because I didn't know how to drive it. But the fact that he wasn't worried about me crashing into the tree, he wasn't worried about his motorcycle. He's worried about me. You know, I have missed that every other time I've ever talked about my near-death experience. But, you know, that was one of those little moments. And I can't believe I missed that. But it was flying in airplanes. I remember flying in airplanes, and I'd be flying along. And I could see through the back of my head, through the window, and I could see what I saw. And I could see the river down below me. I was following along just for the joy of flying. I wasn't doing anything. There was no purpose for it. I just was doing it for joy's sake. And that was what I have from my flying. I have those memories of those, not the moments when I was trying to get to.
These were part of your highlights of your 10-minute film?
Yeah, my flying. Yeah. But it was the joyful part of it. It wasn't how accurate I was in nailing my landing. That was something I have in my brain. But in this little 10 minutes of flying, I got to see the river down below and seeing it from a bird's eye. And, I got to feel the sense of beauty of the earth. And I've had sunrises and sunsets and fishing with my grandfather. I mentioned that earlier, but what was significant, and this light was marveling at it. You know, imagine if you're a little bitty baby, 18 months old. Now, let's go back, 9 months old. And you're trying to take your first steps. And you keep falling down. And then you get up and you fall down. And then you cry because you couldn't do it. And then a month later, you get up, pull yourself up on the coffee table, and then you take those first two or three steps. That's the way the light looked and perceived my little 10 minutes, you know, my little blip of who I was, and marveled at it.
For anyone who doubts the story, his eyes are starting to well up with fear. I mean, you can tell that he's coming from a very emotional standpoint.
Well, imagine this, that just how a parent feels when their child takes their first steps. You know, I might have been angry because I fell down. I might have been angry because I didn't get what I wanted. I might have cried. I might have threw a fit on the ground. All that's gone. Whenever that light sees me taking my little baby steps, oh, wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. That child never did anything wrong. That child never did a thing wrong, ever. Ever. And that's what that being, and laughing at me. Not at me like as in, you fool, but in how odd.
So far, so good. I mean, you're showing the beautiful, positive moments, so it's got to be a good sign, right?
Yeah. and then God asked me, And I call this being God. And
I mean, can you imagine that if you would have chosen your worst moments, then that wouldn't have felt too good.
Now, and you know, and a lot of people are going to say you're going to get it rough on the next time. But I think what I was shown that for was to show what are the good actions, not the good stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've read a lot of near-death experiences books, and a lot of them do mention that when they have their life review, that they do relive the pain that they've caused other people. And you were lucky enough, I guess you didn't have to go through some of that.
Well, I mean, if you want to call it, I think I got shown an example out of my life. This is what I want you to work on. You know what I mean? Instead of being this brutal dictator God who sits there and beats you to death with a hammer over your head every time you mess up, smacks you down, oh my gosh. You know, once you know the real thing, anytime you hear anything that doesn't sound like the real thing, you go, oh, that's not true. That's not what I meant. It's not what I believe. But the being of light, and it asked me, well, what do you think, you know, of your life? And it wasn't talking, and it was communicating this to me. And so God, first of all, I said, God, thank you, God, for my life. And it just didn't sound right, you know, because my version of God was pretty different than probably what most people's version is. Mine was this ruthless God. I mean, it hated the very people that I came to understand. You know, all my thoughts about hating.
So what was your answer? Were you just like speechless, or what?
No, you know what? Thank you for my life. Right? You know what I did? I says, "What do you think of your life?" You know, and I said, well, "Thank you, God, for my life. Thank you for flying." I was like, there's my video. Thank you for flying. Thank you for my grandparents. Thank you for my mother. You know, thank you for my friends. I mean, I was just being thankful, right? Because I know that this being allowed that, you know, for me to have these relationships and for me to be a pilot, you know. However, what really gets me is that people say, well, you know everything in heaven. Well, I didn't know everything at that moment. I was given a pause, like, what do you think from your own understanding? And I said, well, I've never had any children. I've never been married. I thought, well, this has got to be the answer, right? I'm sitting there contemplating, well, what exactly is this being getting at? Because it wasn't, and God asked me, he said, well, did you learn enough about love? And that's when I returned.
He asked you, did you learn enough about love?
Did you learn enough about love? And that's when I retorted, you know, wow, I've never been married, never had children. What a stupid thing to say. Like, I mean, you know what I mean?
Well, if you would have given me a wife, I probably could have learned a lot more, right?
Yeah. You know, but I was thinking that's what God meant. You know, obviously you haven't learned enough about love. It was a pretty ridiculous answer, but that's what I had, you know? So the second I said it, you know, I'm just like a big boot out of heaven. It's like the second I chose.
You got kicked out of heaven right then.
Yeah, instantly. I mean, like, wow. It's like you made your decision. Now you got to live with it. You know what I mean? You're done.
Really, like the answer was good enough?
No, I don't know, but I get.
Maybe you hadn't learned enough or whatever.
Whatever, I just didn't learn enough. Period. Look at that little 10 minutes I had, and so I get kicked out on this road. And you know, when they say streets of gold, you know, you think of it as religious speak. There it was, the streets of gold. Wasn't
this was like translucent? You could see through it.
Yeah, yeah, like a urethane, polyurethane. You can see through it, but not like it wasn't like, you know, you can't see what's on the other side, but you can definitely see through it. And it wasn't physical gold, but it's trees. But you remember when I talked to you about the trees and plants and things like that having lives? But imagine there's no death in them. They're at the absolute the peak of their healthiness. You know, that absolute perfect place where there's no death, dying, nothing. They're there. They're flowering, blooming. or they're crisp, you know, they're green, they're, every blade of grass is like vital and just amazing. The story of that is as opposed to what you see around you every day, which is decay and dying and death. And, it was just beautiful. And so I was getting in this big, huge, long line. And what was in front of me was really interesting. And that there were these orbs of light. And even though I didn't perceive myself as an orb of light because I was looking through. I mean, imagine you're sitting in the middle of this egg and you're looking out of it. You're not looking at your own physical self. And I didn't see a mirror. I couldn't see a mirror to see myself. So I'm looking at this big, long, huge line going down this golden road, you know, and they're all walking right into the most dark door, through the most darkest door. Imagine on the other side of that door I came in, and there it is going out, another one, you know, or is it the same one? I don't know. I mean, I can't tell you, but it felt like it was, but it may not have been. And I'm looking back on it now, and the answer is...
So they're all going through this dark door, and you're like in line to go through the dark door, too?
Yeah.
You thought, well, what else am I going to do? They're all, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do, kind of thing.
Now, here's what... I had a succinct moment, you know, like one of those big moments. And here's what I thought. And I think we talked about it earlier. I said, I've done this many times before. I mean, it was like, quote, unquote, bam, right there. It was like, this is important. I've done this many times before. What is many? Was it 400,000 years? I don't think so. Many doesn't sound like that. But many times I had done this before. You know what I mean? And I started walking along. No, no concept of that. I'm just really curious about the orbs. And they're like stories are popping out at me. You know, they're core cells. You know, like you can see that they're going to have the personalities, you can see their concepts, their thoughts, but their pre-thoughts, you know, you can see what their intentions are, and we were walking together, and boom, you just drop off into darkness.
So you were all orbs of light, you were an orb of light?
Yeah. Right, and so I'm dropping off into this darkness, and I'm falling, like, straight down. There's no sense of how fast, but you just knew you were going fast. I mean, I knew I was going fast, but there was nothing to guide to be able to measure yourself from, except for the other orbs of light that were falling. You know, I'm going along with this. I see them in front of me, and I see them behind me. You know, turning around, looking, and then I look all the way behind me, and that's when it got really crazy, because I started seeing like a Chinese dragon behind me, like a ladder of lights going up, you know, it's like a ladder going up of lights all the way into that hole, which was light now. Okay. You look at it from the
stairway to heaven
kind of thing, or? Well, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call it that, but I want to tell you what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
It's square. I mean, it is.
Heaven.
Yeah. I'm looking at it. It could have been rectangular, but the perspective of it was so huge and giant, but it had a top, a bottom, sides, and it could have been a rectangle, but it seemed like a square, cube, whatever, you know? And this is pre Star Trek Borg, you know? You know, I understood this before then, you know, it was square. It's like a big, gigantic metal spaceship.
I was just going to say, but you wouldn't describe it as a ship, but yeah, I guess you do. Huh?
Yeah. Well, what else would it be?
Yeah, it's kind of floating or flying or whatever, right?
Well, it's floating in space,
yeah, right, right.
And it ain't a planet. You know, it ain't round.
That's very interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's got that door. The inverse, you know, walking out, it's dark, but when you look back, it's light, you know, and I'm falling from it. And here's a really cool part. I'm going down and the orbs, the white light orbs are starting to peel off. You know, some of them are going to the left and right and up and down. And then I start seeing stars. You know, just one star, two stars, a little faint, you know, out there in the peripheral, right? And then, and then I'm just like blasting through stars, past stars. You know, look around me and I'd see those orbs peeling off, you know, going to different stars, different places. But you could see their intentions and they were so different. And this is what changed me as a person, was this trip, okay? Because it wasn't that what I just experienced about love. No, there was a thousand things that changed me, but this changed me. Whenever you see how different other beings are going to other stars, and they have a core, the same core that every other light had, orb had, which is something like love, okay? But their perception of it is so vastly different. I mean, you know, they say, well, we're all alike. No, we're not. These other beings are not like us. They are very different. Their whole way of perceiving things is different. They have a core of love, yes. But they're not like them. I mean, they don't get up in the morning and raise their kids and go to work just like we do. They're different. They're different. They're so different that it made the difference between me and communists and homosexuals and Muslims and liberals to be meaningless. I mean, imagine that it's so meaningless, the difference.
You feel like they were more evolved than what we are? Is that what you're getting at? Or is it different?
Different. I mean, you know,
they're going to different worlds, like a different,
just a different
planet. Do you feel like they were similar to you, that they were a soul, that they were going to a different world or to a different playground?
To say they were different, they were so different. Like their whole concepts, the way they thought, their thought processes, their way they intellectualize, the way that they come to they don't think the way we do. You know, they don't, you know, think, well, I'm thirsty, drink a glass of water. I mean,
going to one of those places wasn't an option for you. You were just kind of being drawn somewhere.
I was going to Earth. You know, I was going back to Earth. What's that?
You were being pulled there. Sort of?
I was falling right there. I was falling.
Falling. Okay.
I was literally falling, at a very fast pace, and so I start seeing the stars go by. I see these beings going off. But what I'm trying to get at from the whole thing is that human beings are so much alike that we're almost like a clone of each other. That's how much we're alike we are compared to these other beings. I mean, we're like just almost.
It seems kind of petty to fight, you know, just because somebody has a different color of skin or you know, sex or whatever. We're so much more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
And you look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean,
if you have 10 heads or whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's insignificant, the differences between us. I mean, we're more akin to a grasshopper than we are to one of those things. You know what I mean? Whatever they were. There were beings going to wherever they were going. But we're more akin to a grasshopper on this earth.
You wouldn't call them more advanced, necessarily?
No. I don't think so. Their light was just like mine. I mean, that's what's advanced. And it's the best there is. There's nothing that gets better than that. And it's just the vessel. We trap this identity that we call human being inside of this. We wrap the soul around it, you know. But the soul is what's advanced, you know. But they start peeling off and going, and then I started seeing planets fly by, you know.
You can see like galaxies. I mean, like from how you see the Milky Way galaxy or arms or anything like that.
No.
Maybe you weren't like in a different galaxy. I mean, you were kind of in space. I think at this point.
Yeah.
So maybe you were already in the Milky Way.
No. I was way beyond it.
Galactic core. I'm just trying. Any idea like where you were?
I was beyond. I mean, imagine there's a place where there are no stars. Okay, you're that far out. Beyond the stars.
Okay.
There's no stars. So if you were to go to the last star and then go past that, all right?
So you were sort of back in the darkness.
Yeah, but it wasn't the same place. I can tell you that. I can tell you there's a huge difference. They're not the same location. Okay? I know that. if you go to the last star and then keep on going twice that, you know, you might get close to it, right? Because I was following it.
Light years and light years away from me. Hundreds of thousands of light years away.
I don't know what, you know, to be able to measure it linearly.
That's pretty.
I'm out there, okay? Imagine that, you know, you get Hubble and you go as far as you can go and then go twice that and then go 10 times that. I mean, you know, whatever that is. But I was.
But you're coming back Earth?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I get back where I'm starting to see.
At any point, did you start to see galaxies or anything?
Yeah, but I was just looking forward. You know what I mean? I'm looking at the orbs. I'm not paying attention, really. But when I started seeing, you know, Mars and Venus, you know, that kinds of stuff, you know, that was like catching my.
So you saw some of our planets.
Yeah, I did.
See Saturn.
I saw Mars. I saw Mars. Didn't remember seeing the sun. No. No. Isn't that weird? I didn't see the sun or the moon. Isn't that crazy?
That is weird.
And you know, it's kind of like, but
where
I did.
Are they? I mean, maybe you're distracted. It's interesting that you saw some of these other planets.
I saw the planets, but I didn't see the sun or the moon. It's almost like they weren't there. I mean, it's not. I mean, that's just weird. But I'm coming back, and then I'm seeing little bitty tiny blue marble, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then I'm about to hit the atmosphere, and then bam, stopped.
Stop. What happened?
Yeah, you wanted to hear a story about the demiurge.
Yeah.
You know. And I couldn't tell you the demiurge story without talking about the light first. But so I don't want you to mistake these two different personalities.
I actually thought we were going to talk about the demiurge first and then get to the light, kind of end it on a positive. But it, you know, works either way. It's fine.
I'm sorry because if I don't tell you about the light first, then you're going to think the demiurge is the light.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, a lot of people would say.
You know, and if you want to go back and change the order, I don't care.
No.
You can start right here.
I was just thinking, hey, we need to end this on a positive, happy note, but we can still do that.
It is what it is.
Well, you haven't gotten to the point where you talked about the end of it all, of the games. That'll definitely be a happy note. So.
I think so. You know.
Okay, so you all of a sudden you stop. You think you're about ready to enter Earth's atmosphere.
Right. Sudden, bam.
Bam. Okay, what happened?
I'm like right in front of this, you know, Norman Rockwell looking kind of God guy, you know? Big, long, flowing white hair. Big white beard. Brassy face.
Santa Claus.
Nah, it ain't that. You ain't gonna think it's Santa Claus after this. Although a lot of people, we'll talk about that later. He had like burning red eyes, brassy face, brass colored face, but he's translucent, kind of like the, you know, like the gold up in, you know, heaven, whatever you want to call that place. And, he's severe. This guy is not somebody that you want to mess with. I mean, he's just full of serious intent. I mean, very, very serious guy. And he's got all these star maps and he's showing them to me. And I'm like absorbing it and he's trying to explain to me everything. I'm like, I'm having to make some agreements to go into a body. And he's showing me why this star is aligned with this and this galaxy and this planet and this, that, and it's like these maps.
You don't remember these details at this point? I mean, that you just remember that he was explaining. It was all over your head that kind of that you couldn't follow
it? No, I understood it at the time, but it's like it was blanked from my, it's like it's taken from me. I was left. He opened up some new books, okay, for me. And he showed me how we interact with one another. And one of them was waves. Okay, we're in waves, and the waves go across the whole earth, and they're like imagine ocean waves, and they're waves that go across the entire earth of light and darkness. And he showed me how he was like a filter for the earth. It caused the waves. In other words, he caused the waves by his presence of darkness. It's like, imagine putting up a veil in front of a window, and some of it goes through. And so, but that somehow putting the veil of it caused the light and the darkness on the earth to pull up. The light pulls up and the darkness pulls down. And so the whole earth was like a big round ball of waves that move across the internet.
Like a prism in any kind of sense or not?
I don't know what that, I mean, imagine a bowling ball, but with waves going all the way across it. I mean, if you want to call it a prism, I just know what it was, okay? And the light pulled down. I mean, the light pulled up, the darkness pulled down, and it was like a perfect balance to him. And he was trying to explain to me how he was superior, okay, to the light. Okay, how was he superior? Because he had this thing balanced, and everybody lined up for miles and miles to come here because they wanted to experience what he has. And what he has is this perfect balance of one-third light and two-thirds light and one-third darkness. It's like a counterbalance, the yin and yang thing, but it's not, the lightness is, it's more light than it is dark. And it's not always exactly in balance. And what he was describing is he needed me to do some things to keep the balance of light up. Because if there aren't people doing light things, then the balance gets too wonkered and gets too dark, and it's like game over. Everybody goes home. It's done. And he cannot, people call him the devil. How can a guy be the devil who wants good things to happen? You know, that wants light things to happen and wants love, kindness, joy.
Yeah, I was just about to say, he's kind of encouraging you to do good works. That doesn't sound, like...
Right? He ain't the devil. I mean, I've heard...
But maybe in a selfish way, because he wanted to keep the system...
Yeah, well, yeah, the motive is totally insincere. You know what I mean? It's just because he wants to prove that he's better, than the light. Because look, I've got all these people that come down here, trillions of souls, spirits, they all come down here, they line up.
So you said you were following in that, so you think that we're kind of, we fell from heaven, like we're the, you hear about the fall and the two-thirds of the angels that rebelled against, Lucifer's rebelled against God and came. Do you think that we're all part of, right, most of our souls here are part of that?
Well, I think a third of us. I think that if you were to balance it out, that would be about right, because it was two-thirds light and it was a third dark. It was just, and it was gray. And I didn't see it in color. It's really weird. I saw it in grays, and I saw the grays, and I saw how the lights can move and cause tsunamis of light going across. And he showed me how I could influence the world in a positive way, meaning light. And he didn't say the word positive. Okay. And that's my words. Okay. He's saying he needs me to do this.
He just wants the system perpetuated. I mean, he just wants to keep it going. Otherwise it's game over and his system wasn't so good to begin with or something.
Imagine him. He creates tension. He creates tension between me and you, between me and the Catholics, me and the Baptists, me and the Muslims, me and the communists. He creates the tension to create the waves. You know what I mean?
I think you mentioned that the two-thirds light and the one-third, that's probably what's behind the 666, meaning it's like two-thirds is
yeah. Nobody's saying that.
No, I've never heard that.
And I'm the only one that
somebody mentioned two-thirds, but not in that context of but, and dark and...
But it is. It is what it is. That's what he showed me. And he showed me that it's his game. And if I want to participate, I've got to agree to do what he says. And you know what that means? He showed me what that means. And when I tell you this...
You would have said no. You wouldn't say no because everybody lines up for miles.
Well, if you say no, you know what you do? You just sit on a shelf for until the end of time. Is that what you want to do? I don't know, but just to be an observer. And maybe not even that. Maybe you just turn off until the end of time. It's compelling. The story is compelling. And that's...
I've heard the story is compelling. I can't wait to get to that eventually. But yeah, I agree. It's a bit, 'cause I have to be honest, like, I was kind of leaning towards not going to the light, you know, and but you said it might be okay to kind of hang out there for a while or whatever, but that what's the point of being in nothingness, you know? And once you do hear the totality of the story, it's a very, very beautiful story. That is indeed the scenario we're in. So anyway, let's go on.
But he tells the story of his failure. Yeah. You know, and why would he do that? He ultimately concedes, you know, when he's in a chess game and he starts losing. And when he starts losing, and I'll tell you when, there's going to be a period of darkness that, and he showed me this. Now, this is a little bit different how he showed me. I saw at least three books. Okay. Two of them, they blend together somehow. However, one of them I literally saw from a camera outside the earth. Fixed camera. Like it never moves. And it's there. And from this fixed camera, I saw the earth pop up there. And then I saw it go through different phases. It was really beautiful. Wasn't, you know, completely light, but it was beautiful, pristine. And then it starts to get a little darker, it gets lighter. You know, in that two-thirds balance thing, he's showing me how good of a game he's played. What a good chess player he is, right? He's showing me how he manipulates things. And when things get a little bit out of whack over here, he like lets more light in. And like, you know, more of you light folks, you know, those folks that do light things, you know, like love, kindness, joy, compassion, mercy. He starts letting more of those in, right? Because he wants to keep his little chess game going. Yeah. And so he's doing this. And then there's the ones that are pulling down. And they're like the spirits that cling to us. Okay. So all the while, you know, you think he's like Mr. Nice Guy. No way.
He's trying to prove to God that he can make a system that's better or something.
And, yeah.
But how would that be better if it's like half or two thirds or, when you want like 100% light, like okay, if we had 100% light, it's all joy, it's all love, wouldn't that be better? Or is there a different perspective that I'm missing? Like,
I think the unknown. Mm-hmm. I think the unknown is what drove him initially. Imagine that you're in a big, gigantic room that's completely filled with light, and there's one little square or rectangle of darkness. And you know everything except what's behind that one little square. And so you're going to sit there and, you know, go by that. And you're sitting there doing all these great, groovy things, awesome things, amazing things. But you know, every time you pass by that little square that says, and right in front of it, you know that nobody's supposed to go through there. And there it is. Oh, there it is.
You don't think the original system that maybe God created was perfect? I mean, or at least he thought that it wasn't perfect, and he thought he could do better.
I think that little dark square was created to create motion, the sense of motion, of multiple perspectives. Okay, I think God split up. And I think what God, the light, created was a lesser aspect of herself. And I want to say herself in that. That light that I saw in heaven felt more feminine than masculine. And that's too strong. You know, it's too strong to say feminine, but it was less.
But that's the way you experienced it. I mean, I just...
Well, there's, you know, masculine to me is this abusive father that I see in my religion, as opposed to this loving, divine, kind being that never, ever changes.
Did you experience the demiurge as a male?
Yeah, it was male. He was. And he was trying to show me how his game was better than the light game. You know, you go up there,
Was he convincing at all?
Well, obviously.
Good presentation?
He made a pretty good presentation, you know, because I signed up, didn't I? I came back.
In order to come here, did you have to agree? You're talking about some kind of agreement.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if you were a computer programmer and they have statements called if-then-else statements. Imagine that if there's this one plan that he shows you, and if you do all of this, then everything you dream of will come true, and it will be more or less painless. You'll walk through life, and you'll be, you know, the savior of the world, right? And yet, you know, you get to be the hero, you know? And
That's not the main plan was, is you get to be, he's like appealing to your ego, like, you'll be the savior, you'll be the hero kind of thing?
No.
Just, you're going to have this great life with a beautiful wife and $1 million home, and it was really like a savior kind of thing?
No. I mean, I'm overstating it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'm not trying to be literal here. I'm just trying to say he's showing you the best possible life you could possibly lead. You know, the least painful way for you to experience life. Pain-free, you get everything that you wanted, and you come back.
Doing any percentages of this?
No percentages. But what I saw was that there were branches that went off to either side. If this happens, then this happens. And the if, and then. Looks like a pretty good...
I was
looking at the thens.
Right.
I'm going to do the thens, and then everything's going to work out great.
If you do this, then you'll have a model as a wife, and then you ignore the else part. Like, if you don't do that, then you won't ever get married or whatever.
Well, I mean, I don't know about the model thing. I'm just saying that those kind of values weren't it wasn't from a selfish perspective. It was like, you get to do...
Just being matter of fact about it.
Yeah. And that looks pretty good. And so if you get shown that the best one that just goes straight, like no detours, it looks pretty awesome. It really does. And you're thinking, I can do that. But you don't realize that there are trillions of variables and at least thousands of participants in your life. I mean, if you just talk about human beings, I'm not talking about...
I'll have to live up to their contracts too.
Yeah. They're all doing their if-then-else statements also. And so it's you're thinking that this is going to be you hear people say, well, God has a plan for us. Yeah. And then that God has a plan for you where things work out pretty good. And then there's some pretty ones that aren't so great. And those ones that where you get beat up a lot and you get run down and you get sick a lot and you get hurt a lot and dis-ease. Think about dis-ease. You know, whenever you're not going along your plan, you get dis-ease, you get uncomfortable. And so you sit there and keep on going, doing the same thing, even though it's making you sick. And if you're not paying attention to that plan and you forget, that's the problem. You forget the plan. You don't remember.
And he wasn't necessarily coming from the standpoint like, okay, you need to learn these lessons. And so, yeah, it's probably better. I know this isn't the ideal life, but if you take this path, then you'll be able to learn these lessons. So it'll be good for you. It was more appealing to your, ego or greed kind of thing. Like, if you do this, you'll have this wonderful life. Is that accurate?
No. Really, when you come back, you think that you're going to save the world or whatever you're going to do. You know, you're going to make, my thing is I wanted to end war. And I thought I was going to be able to do that. I thought that was going to be the big thing I was going to do. And I didn't. You know, here we are on the verge of going into World War III with Iran again, and nobody even cares.
So you think everybody that comes here pretty much had to go through the interviews and stuff, make all these agreements?
Oh, yeah.
And have you heard any other interview experiencers say that they've experienced this too, or they just don't want to talk about it, or have you brought it up to anyone at all, and they just kind of changed the topic quickly, or what's been your experience?
It goes over like a cold stone. I mean, I think a lot of people who see the negative stuff, like meeting the demiurge, if you want to call him that, he's certainly not the devil. I mean,
devil is in the personification of pure evil, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, but whatever he is, he's just like us. He just knows.
You think it's what most people think of as God?
Oh, absolutely.
People that think of God as more like, because he's got sort of control over this world, right? Would it be accurate to say he created it?
Yeah. If he didn't, he took control of the after the first little.
Okay, so why would God or the light allow him to do this? I mean, is it by part of the game? Is it better, or is just we have to all have free will? And if he says, "I want to do this," and we all say, "Hey, that sounds like a good idea," then we're coming too.
You know, I'm more speculating at this point, but I just think that there was no motion. And what I saw is that, especially when I saw the pillars in heaven, I saw that you just adjust your perception of it a little bit and you could see the different stories popping out at you. And so I think that we're creating stories. I think that's what we do. And I think they're interesting stories and I think that we're better for it. I really do. And he would, and you know, the demiurge is sitting there going, yay, you know, he's right. I'm right. You know, because we do, we go through, you know, everybody says you got to experience darkness before you can know, the light. And I don't know if that's true exactly, but here's what I do know, that when we're over there, we're insensitive to our pain here. We're insensitive to it because we don't feel it really. We can intellectualize it over there. And I intellectualized it when I was shown the plan that I was going to get to do. I could intellectualize it. I think I can do better than Z plan. I can do A plan. It was, but it was an intellectual exercise. I didn't realize I'd have to.
You don't at that point remember like the last four or five incarnations where you didn't get your A plan, but you got your Q.43 plan or something?
No. You know, I'm certain I have little blips. They call them deja vus. And if you want to know how this demiurge is, as you call him, world is not perfect. Just think of deja vu. People see little blips into the future. It's obviously not a perfect machine. If we're seeing in it, because sometimes you see stuff that just doesn't even matter. You know, you see, you know, a meaningless conversation.
And going back to what you were saying about the agreements, all the if then else kind of code. I mean, that's computer code. I mean, one of the theories is that, you know, maybe it's sort of like a computer simulation or some sort. Do you think it's possible it's like part of a computer algorithm or program like simulation?
I know it's recorded that way, like a program. I mean, imagine that time. If you first of all, and most near-death experiences will say there's no sense of time, but what if it's all done and we're just seeing the perspective in our kaleidoscope by just adjusting our perspective?
This little chunk of code that's over here,
right?
This is like another chunk that is inaccessible at that point. Right?
And so imagine that we're all of us, you know, every molecule is, because if you look again, like if I go back to the hand, the hand's experiencing the world completely different than the neck is, or the eye is, right? And so we're all little pieces of this big, huge thing, and we're all perspectives. And yeah, if you want to call it a program, that's kind of simplistic, I think, because it's, I mean, you got to understand the capacity of knowing everything from the very beginning of time all the way to the end of time. And if you already know that ahead of time and you're looking at it, you can look pretty smart.
But if it's like some sort of movie or play or some kind of drama that's being enacted or presented, I mean, you can store that on a DVD, plug it into a machine and watch it. I mean, at some point we will watch it later, right?
Absolutely. We'll get our life review. I got to see the Earth from the very beginning, go through phases, it go completely dark, and then at the very end, it was completely brilliant light. I'm talking about not just brighter, like it wasn't bright like the light is in heaven, but it's the brightest it can possibly get. We'll still have physical bodies, but they'll be physically lighter, and they'll be brighter, period. Physically lighter, they'll be brighter, period. There'll be no sickness, death, no illness. People won't eat people, or they won't eat animals, or they won't kill anything. The plants, I saw them, and we will not kill a plant. There'll be scientists that are there that literally, if you eat the root, you won't eat the leaves. If you eat the leaves, you won't eat the root, or you'll just eat the fruit of the plant. You know, it's so interesting how the world's going to be for thousands of years. And it's worth, that's why we keep on playing. Because we think that we're going to get a chance at this. And that is in one of those if-then-else statements. You know, if you do some growing up while you're here, and you start doing some right things. I mean by helping out instead of hurting, you might get to participate in this.
And you totally got the sense that he was genuine, that he was going to hold his promise. Like, if you do this, this will happen. Versus just kind of selling you a con job, like, you know, keep telling you, put kind of putting you back into this recycling kind of thing, and then you never really, you know what I'm saying? You definitely got the feeling he's sincere and capable about that.
He's admitting he fails.
Does he?
He did, and why would he do that? You know, except that he's saying, look.
He admitted that he failed in showing you how the game ends.
Right. He fails with his two-thirds light strategy. It doesn't work. Eventually.
Why is that?
Well, because the world gets out of control.
People start refusing to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't want to reincarnate, or whatever you want to call it. They won't sign the contracts anymore. Whenever you're a chess player, I'm a chess player, okay? And if I'm playing against a computer and I know I'm going to lose and I'm behind a piece, I might as well quit.
You know, if there is a computer game out there, a chess game. I think it's called Archon or something like that. And I want to say it's created by a company called Demiurge. I swear, it's something very close to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got this computer company that makes sports games called EA Sports. It's in the game. And so it's interesting that in the Sumerian culture, their name for this, I guess you could call them Demiurge or is Inky or EA. So I find that interesting that they actually have a chess game called Archons. Yeah.
Well, this is a chess game, and it's a very complex one. You know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, whatever the most powerful chess game is, nothing compared. That's just one chessboard. But imagine you have a chessboard with trillions of players on it.
The chess game is two sides. It's like you get your black squares and your white squares or whatever. There's two different colors of squares.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right. And you know what's so interesting is that there's two-thirds more light, pure lights. I'm not one. I'm going to tell you right off the bat. Don't go thinking I'm claiming to be Jesus. I'm not. I'm not Buddha. I'm not Jesus. I'm not anything. I'm better than I was. I'm not who I was. Who I was clearly somebody destined to destroy, kill, murder, racist, sexist, xenophobic. I'm not that. I'm not one of those points of pure light that I saw. And they're all over the earth. And not everybody that's light one day is going to be light the next day. They get influenced by the world around them. And we have crystal clear moments in our lifetime that are brilliant. And they show up on that, you know, I told you about the waves of light. They're crystal clear moments of light that we have sometimes, that aha. And it ain't whenever you save the world. It's whenever you did something pure, loving, kind, joyful, mercy, compassion, kindness. You cannot have compassion in the light because there's nothing to have compassion for. There's nothing hurting. You know, you cannot have mercy in the light because there's nothing to show mercy for. It's perfect. Here, there's a reason. We allow so much hurt here so that we can get opportunities to either experience mercy or compassion or to show it. It's like our opportunity to do something that can't be done in the light. And that's the pitch. If I'm going to pitch for the Demiurge, that's what I'm going to pitch. Show me. You can tell me, because up there are people sending souls here every single day, and they have no concept of our pain and suffering. And they just keep doing it. They line up, get in line. They have no concept that they're going to sit there and drop into a body that's going to hurt other people. And you do, everybody. I don't care who you are. You're going to hurt somebody. Just because if you walk through a field, you're going to step on a bug. You know what I mean? You're going to hurt somebody. If you have a baby, you're certainly going to hurt somebody. Because that woman is going to be hurt by that. If you're a woman, you're going to hurt that man. You're going to, it's going to happen. It happens. We hurt each other. That's what we do. But if we can do anything in this world that makes it so we get towards that place where we're not hurting each other. And I'm talking about in that beautiful world that I saw where it's pure light. It's not pure light. It's very, very filled with light. It's show mercy, show kindness, show compassion. If you can do those things, if you can do those things in this world, then it's like an entrance into that world. If you can't do that here, you don't get to play in that world. You know what I mean? That's the trick. How do I get there? By showing compassion and mercy and kindness. But also, here's what I want people to know. If you love everyone else in the whole world and you don't love that baby that's you, if you're cruel to yourself, if you're unkind to yourself, unmerciful to yourself, if you don't get those things figured out in this lifetime, you're probably going to line up and do it again. You know, as you sit there and abuse yourself, hurt yourself, and I'm not even talking about the people that go out and hurt other people. I mean, it's easy to say, you know, I'm not hurting people. I don't go out and run people over on the road. I don't back up over people. I don't treat people poorly at work. But what if you've got this little battle going on inside your own head? And there's a part of our brain that stores those thoughts, that works on that actual aspect. It says things like, I hate you. I want to die. You're stupid. It's a little bitty part of our brain. It's right on the other side that says, don't put your finger in the fire. It's like there's one side on one side it does something to make you not stick your finger in a fire, not to put your finger in an electrical socket. But on the opposite side of the brain, they have a name for it. And I should have looked it up, but I wanted you to hear it straight from my heart because I know it. I fought it for 20 years. I would help everybody else give the shirt off my back, literally, you know, give, volunteer, did all kinds of things. And those are good things. I'm not going to say they're not getting into heaven because they will. And they do. The good stuff you do does get into heaven. It gets into your life record. It's recorded forever and ever and ever. But am I going to get back in that line again?
Well, I was just thinking about how to end the game. And I guess another way would be like if, we do improve ourselves to where we can go to other playgrounds and stay there because we've done the work that we need to do. So then that light would leave this place and the 66% light would drop down towards that 50, which you see is unstable, right?
Right.
If we all better ourselves and go somewhere else, then the system would fail at that point too. So it's not just don't reincarnate kind of thing. You could reincarnate and actually graduate, right?
Well, we can participate in this world and others. And I'll tell you how that works out. I saw the very end. I mean, I'm talking about this demiurge or whatever you want to call it. The guy who does all the contracts. He records everything. He's like the producer. Okay. And he's producing this show. It's his show. And if you don't sign up for his contract, you don't enter.
And it's like Simon Cowell.
I don't know who that is, but...
American Idol.
I'm not a TV watcher, so I don't know all that stuff. But anyway, it's his game. You know, people call him God for a reason because he can give you gifts. He's like Santa Claus for you. Okay. He gives you undeserved gifts. Okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting that the word archon actually supposedly means ruler. I mean, they're not our rulers. They like to think they're our rulers, but the demiurge is thought of as the god, but he's not god. And these archons want to be rulers, but they're not technically, right? So I just kind of find that interesting.
Oh, I don't know. I know a little bit about archons and stuff like that, but I'm going to tell you my perspective. Is that okay?
Well, what I heard is that they're basically mind parasites. Like they can come in and maybe like spirit attachments, or I don't know either. But that's sort of what.
Well, let's talk about angels. Is it okay to talk about angels?
Sure.
They're right there behind you. They're tugging at you. They mess with your electronics if you're not getting it right. They also keep you from getting.
We're talking about fallen angels or
what do you want to call them?
I don't know.
the light gets through sometimes. Okay, you're driving down the road and.
Are you talking about angels like spiritual beings with wings, or are they aliens or what? I mean, I don't know.
You know what? If you want to call beings from a spaceship aliens, I don't know. I mean, are they?
I mean, do you know what they look like, or do you just have a sense that they're
angels? I've seen angels before. I've seen different kinds. But I'm just talking about the ones that I don't see, the ones that are looking over my shoulder, you know, the ones that, that say, you know, whenever you're driving down the road and you look off to the right and you get the, you see this little glint over there and you just, you change lanes and then there's an accident right in front of you that you missed. I mean, wouldn't you say that there's some influence there? If you ignore that sign, we're given all kinds of little signals all through our life to help us get down to that better life outcome. Okay. It's not all what we think. We all have free will. We're given lots and lots and lots and lots of help to get things to go the way that we're supposed to go. I mean, sometimes we ignore them and we break our necks. I've broken my neck 3 times. I've started listening.
That's
got to
be bad.
Yeah. You know, so I start listening, I pay attention. I do stuff that my intuition says do, because it might just save my life. But it also is where I'm, it might be where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be doing something. If I don't quit my job and move to Austin, if I don't, you know, change my career, if I don't meet this certain person and have an interview. You see what I'm saying? You start listening to your intuitions. And sometimes your intuitions are not right, though, because they're sometimes they're pulling down. They're pulling down. And that's that. If you talk about that demiurge, the guy with a brassy face, flaming eyes, he doesn't always want you to do good because he doesn't want to mess it up the other way. You see what I'm saying? Because it's game over for him. You see? It's game over for him either way. If the balance gets too bright, he loses. If the balance gets too dark, he loses. He has to keep it in a happy medium. So if you're going to really change the world, he's going to come against you.
So if it's perfectly balanced, he actually loses, right? When he gets right at it, is 50% sustainable?
No, it's 2/3. 66 2/3 is perfect, for him.
But you're saying if it gets
too low, if it gets below 50%, then no, who wants to play in a world where you don't know whether you're going to live or die today? You're going to wake up and get eaten by a lion. I mean, can you imagine you go back to a prehistoric, earth? There aren't going to be very many human beings around because they're going to get eaten. You know, if you go back to, you know, I mean, and who knows how many times the earth has been, wiped clean, you know, and I'm not going to say I saw that, but I saw something like that. But it wasn't like this big one that's going to happen. Okay, the big one.
But you were talking about all this, like these, where we don't kill other animals and we can, you know, harvest the maybe not harvest the whatever, but eat, you know, the roots and the plants and the vegetables and the fruits and all that stuff. So where there's no killing, and there's this glorious time of, on the planet where everything's, you know, light, pure, I mean, not pure light, but just very light. How do we get to that stage? I mean, do we go through something that's like a turmoil?
Yeah, it's going to be bad. I mean, there's going to be no light whatsoever. I mean, I'm not talking about, there's going to be no sunlight. There's not going to be any electricity. There's not going to be any electronic devices. There won't be.
You think it's in your lifetime, this lifetime, our lifetime, or any idea? It could be years from now, or any idea?
Time is not fixed. It's very flexible and fluid. And I think anybody who says anything, they can, if they say this on this date, this is going to happen. They may have gotten a little snapshot of something, but I don't think that they're getting the whole picture. They may have got a snapshot that may or may not happen. And you can,
you didn't see like a World War III or IV or whatever.
What I saw is a lot worse than any kind of war.
People, presidents that are still alive involved in it. So you know what I'm saying? It's like maybe you would have the idea that it's in our lifetime, but.
You know what? That's anything that I can say like that. Why didn't I just go see the lottery numbers? You know, I saw everything, but I'm not allowed to remember it. And why? And here's what I want to know. Why did he let me remember this whole thing? It's because he wants us to know. Otherwise he wouldn't have told us. He wouldn't have told me, and I wouldn't be telling you if he didn't want me to. If it was like game over for him, he wouldn't want me to. Because you know what I'm saying? If it's going to pull things either way, if it's going to really make a difference, if it's really going to change the world in such a big way that it either pulls the whole world down into chaos, or if it lifts it up out, then it doesn't happen, because he doesn't want that. And so
I was thinking about that. I mean, because you're saying 2/3, and we've got like maybe 7 billion people on the planet, and I don't know where we're at in that equilibrium, whether we're closer to 50% right now or 2/3, but like the difference between, say, 66% and 50% is like 16%. That's like 1 out of 6 people. So you're talking about over 1 billion people would have to, you know, change their tune, so to speak.
Yeah,
it's a lot, but it could be done.
It can be done. And it is being done, and there are people pulling up, and that's the reason why every time you see something really awesome, and it seems like it's going to get off the ground, and everybody's going to get behind it, and then all of a sudden just water gets thrown all over the, you know, that they end up, you know, calling them crackpots or whatever, ridiculous, you know, but their intention was right, they were going along, and then they get discredited, humiliated, the media comes out and blasts them. And then it just dies.
I was just going to say, yeah, the media has so much power and kind of control a lot of the masses' thinking. But, you know, with the internet and some podcasts and the freedom, I mean, who knows how long we'll have it. But there is a window of opportunity there for us to reach out and maybe get a hold of some people. Alternative media, basically, alternative news.
Yeah, it's kind of like an aspirin, though. You know what I mean? By it being an aspirin, alternative media, the internet, things like that, because it stops us from doing real things. I mean, I do it. I'm just as guilty as everybody else, because I want to know more. I want to know what's coming. But how we act is diminished sometimes by it. You know, I'm not saying it can't be a powerful force of good, but it can't all be done behind a microphone, and it can't all be done on a website. It has to be incorporated into our inside of us, and that is like what creates the waves. I'm not saying a website can't, because it does. In fact, those vibrations, they go out, and they go out across the entire universe.
I guess what I'm thinking of is if more and more people are probably coming, like I did, to the realization that, you know, somewhat we're being told that by religious institutions or political parties, you know, that we're being fed up. Back of lies, right? So you're looking maybe, so now you're thinking, well, maybe there's some evil entity that's behind it all. But, you know, with some of these answers, it kind of helps explain, it gives you reason to want to do better with your life, right? Or that there's, it gives you hope, I think. I mean, a lot of people, it's a growing number of people that are just in a feeling of hopelessness, like, you know, we're trapped and we can't get out. But you've got some answers that I've never heard.
Well, I mean, to think that it's all good out there, that's just, you know, that's completely wrong. I mean, I hear lots of people sugarcoat their, I mean, they have a near-death experience where they saw everything was good, everything was perfect. Man, that ain't what I saw. I saw where it was perfect, and it ain't here. Man, I came back, and oh my gosh, I hated myself. For what I believe.
To be perfectly honest, when I went to that meeting, I thought, there's no way I'm going to find somebody who's even going to entertain what I have to say or these ideas. I was thinking the very first person I was going to talk to was going to say, oh, yeah, the light's wonderful and you're crazy. But you're like the very first person. Now, granted, because you mentioned the PSYOPs thing is why I came up and thought maybe you can understand where I'm coming from.
Right.
Maybe he's seen something else, but I'm very surprised that. Found you, you know, and that you experienced this side of the coin, right?
Yeah. I beat myself up for 20 years, real literally, just hated myself. Even though I would go out and do these things I thought were good, helping people, being kind, compassionate, merciful, I would just hate myself because I couldn't do enough. You know what I mean? I couldn't do enough. Never could. Still can't. But at some point, you got to say, I'm going to get up and do something today that helps.
You got to have faith in like the butterfly effect or like a networking. Like if you can change 10 people, maybe they can change 10 people. Those 10 people, you know, all of a sudden you're talking about possibly millions or that billion that we might need. You know?
Well, that wave that I was talking about. And, you know, my great sadness though is that I could do my very best, and they're going to send in the counters, you know, they'll pull down your family, they'll pull down your, whatever you're working on. If you're working on something that's really cool, they'll drag you down in another area to keep you from really accomplishing that absolutely transformational thing. And they'll drag you down, and they'll hurt you, and they'll hurt people around you. And when they hurt the people around you that are not spiritually like there, like full blown, I've got my protections out. I know what's coming. I can hear the voice of the difference. I can literally, if I go and listen to a church, and I go into a church, I don't even have to know their language and know what they're saying is it either sounds like the light or it sounds like the demiurge. It either sounds like love or it sounds like this two-thirds God that people call God. I know the difference, and I'll walk right out of it. I remember walking out of churches covering my children's ears because I didn't want them to hear what they were saying because they were lying. And they were saying they were God. And then at some point I started figuring out their God is the demiurge. Their God is that one, the two-thirds light guy. He's not good. He's not evil. He's just mostly good. But I mean, let's do a fair deal. If you make a 66.66 on your math paper, you just failed. You know what I mean? If you just judge yourself on what college says or high school even, you failed. You didn't even get a 70%.
Yeah, I don't know. Back when I was in school, 60% was usually passing. Yeah, there are definitely some courses in college where, yeah, you don't hit 70%.
Well, making a D ain't exactly a stellar life. No. And it ain't a stellar world. It ain't the world that I want to be in. But am I willing to come back for another one like this? No. I don't want to. And and if I can plant it in my heart in a loving way, that I've done a lot of cool stuff. I've done a lot of love, done a lot of forgiveness, compassion, mercy, kindness. If I can go there and say, look, I know I could do more, but I'm ready to participate in that next one where the light turns bright. And if I get told no, then
I have a feeling your movie reel is going to be a little bit longer than 10 minutes next time around.
Yeah, well, you know, afterwards, I've committed myself to being a teacher. I've taught blind, the deaf. I've taught the thousands of children. I try to teach people through radio, through the internet. And the only thing that I can say is I may not be that pure light, whatever it is, but at least I try to express what I learned to the limits of my ability. I'm not saying I'm there all the time. I'm not Jehovah. I'm not Jesus. I'm not Muhammad. I'm not Buddha. I'm not Krishna. I'm none of that, but I know I'm doing better than I was, where I was a psychopath, you know, egomaniacal, racist, sexist, xenophobic, you know, hate monger. You know, I'm not that. So I'm doing better. Hoping that us talking about God being love has changed the world. I think it has. I think there's a lot less people that are willing to hang on to their hateful God. And if we can get rid of people wanting to hang on to that God that's willing to drag us down to teach us a lesson.
It seems like God's been used as a tool for going to war. I convince people that it's necessary to go to war. You know, the holy wars. And, you know, they wave the flag and then they say, well, you know, it's in God, like you're saying, God's on our side. And they just play off both sides against each other and they profit a lot from war.
Well, you know, the thing is that as many people do good, there are some that actually are very powerful, and they're not good. They are there to balance this out, and
so they have a purpose.
Yeah, they have a purpose, not for the light. The light could do without them. You know, that's the bargain.
Once the game to be over with, right?
Right.
You can all go home.
Right. I mean, but God created created this darkness so that there could be motion. But the best thing is to be where it's a lot better balance. I mean, there's still going to be children born in this new world. There's still going to be, you know, you're going to still eat. You know, it isn't going to be just like hanging around on clouds. There's going to be work to be done. There's going to be cleaning up the earth, first of all. And then the next thing is there's going to be creating new systems that are going to help out to create a better world. And the next thing is, yeah, we're going to get to have our fun. We're going to create musical instruments. We're going to dance. We're going to sing. We're going to have there's no more crummy jobs. All jobs will be from a place of our joy. What is it we want to learn in this lifetime? You know, if you want to play sniper games, guess what? There's another world for that.
Well, I'll get to be 30 years old and at the peak of our beauty too.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. It's a lot better. We're going to be, imagine if you were to take all your DNA and come out with the best one. You know, you get it. It's going to be like that. Whatever the good qualities of you, you know, the best version of you. And I think personally that I saw somebody that looks a lot like me, a little bit younger version of me, picking up the earth, removing PVC metal from buildings. Looked just like me. I'm not saying it was me, not this me. I mean, I probably die in this one. You know, I mean, I didn't see it, but I probably die in this one. But I saw a me in a world that gets better, where all the buildings get totally taken down to the ground. And all the metal and PVC all gets taken off or off planet.
You're not sure how exactly that comes about. Like, was it a revolution or a war? I mean, did you see the transition period?
I saw the darkness, and then I saw the light completely covering the earth. It comes the light finally goes through unshielded. The demiurge, as you called him, just completely gives up. He says, I lose. Game over. You know, you won. No more. No, people are not coming here anymore. But the remnant, there will be a remnant. And the remnant will,
we won't all just go back to heaven at that point.
No.
Game over, earth over, go back to heaven. We actually have a beautiful experience.
Well, people will start coming back. Whenever the earth gets wiped out, and you know, and there's all kinds of horrible, awful people who want to kill most of the planet, and they're trying to bring this on. And all I can tell you is that their intentions, even though they have two intentions, their one intention is because the Earth it needs to be have the population reduced, but the other intention is nefarious. You know, killing people is not good, and so they have this dual bipolar mentality that makes them think that what they're doing is good, and when in fact it's the polar opposite. If you're poisoning children so that it won't be less children on the earth, you know, shame on you. You know, I'm sorry. There's got to be a better way to do it than poisoning them and killing them.
You recall, it comes to mind the quote of like Prince Charles saying that he'd like to come back as be reincarnated as a virus or whatever, and it's like. It's great.
Well, it's going to happen with or without Prince Charles. Okay, I mean, I saw it happen, and I believe it will. And I don't think
we don't die either. We live for as long as we want. I mean, there's no death, right?
Well, from my perception of it, is that we just are done. In other words, kind of like read the Jesus story, he just goes into heaven, right? But in this lighter version of us, we'll have options to go back. In other words, your turn's over. Let's go let somebody else do it. But it's not like dying with a horrible, your heart quitting or your brain locking up or getting an aneurysm or a stroke. It won't be like that. It'll be, okay, you go home. You know,
this goes on for like what, thousands of years or
thousands. The way I saw it was not linear, but I did see it was a good long periods of time. It wasn't just like a you know, a few weeks or months. It was thousands of years. Yes. And, it goes on for a good amount, but then at the very end,
we're still learning lessons along the way here.
Yeah. We're learning how to be
I mean, are we still going to have like jealousy and hatred and greed?
Nah. Well, first of all, there's not going to, there will be. Okay. But it'll be real hard to get there because you won't have any mental health issues. Okay. You won't have chemical problems. You won't have addictions. Without chemical problems, addictions, disease, if you don't have disease and no reason to make money because you're not going to go hungry. And the place I saw, the weather's even tempered, temperature, even temperatures, they're temperate is what they call it. You know, imagine Southern California without without any bad days, no smog, you know. But all over the world.
This is the plan A that we would have been sold all along, right?
Right. And so, you know, won't have any reason to have windows because there won't be any pollution to blow through there. I mean, you can work up some jealousy, but it'd be real hard to do. Whenever, you know, you could say, well, I'm jealous of this person. Well, you know, after they're done with the person they're with, after 100 years, maybe, you know, y'all can hook up or whatever, you know, but you, you know, but it's going to be, but there's not going to be any sickness or mental health that's going to problems that cause it. If you get jealous, they're just going to take you out. You know, as you're done, you know, if you, and it, it's going to be more transparent. The thoughts, it's kind of like in heaven.
You think at this point it is telepathic?
Kind of like that. Okay, but there's it isn't completely telepathic in that. If you don't want somebody to hear, to read your thoughts, they're not going to read them.
Oh, so you do have like a part more, some kind of way to...
Yeah, I mean...
There is privacy of thought.
But, you know, if you're dealing so with...
You commit a crime or something like that, people will know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? But what if you don't want them to know that
thought? There's going to be those that do. Okay.
They can pick up on the little nuance. And,
right. And then you get taken out. You know what I mean? It's like... And I believe it. There is a chance. There is, but if you mess up during that time, you know, you've really
you need to be taken out.
You need to be taken out. Come on, you're not going to die.
Very, very small.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most people. Well, first of all, you have to have proven yourself, okay, to get there. Okay, you know, I've worked on these things. I've been working on them. You know, or I did it once and did it right. But the point is that, you know, you're going to have proven yourself and then you'll get to remember, you know what I mean? It won't be like this time where we forget everything each time we come. You'll remember your lessons. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the problems. That's the biggest problem I have with the reincarnational system that just taught to us is that how can you grow and learn if you don't remember what you're being rewarded or punished for? You know, we don't remember the past life, right? But, why we can't, why we're being punished. Now, maybe in our spirit world, you've got lessons and classes. And, but while we're here, we don't remember.
Well, it's kind of like spiritual muscle memory. There, I think that we gain some. But then, depending on what we do, you know, that right out of the box, you know, we start crying for our mom's tit, you know, and then we get jealous whenever she doesn't give it to us. And so, right out of the bat, we're already, you know, creating that separation, you know, and then the mom gets tired of the child's crying, you know, and puts them out of the room, closes the door, you know. I mean, there's so much that we think that we can work our way through, but we're not living inside of that little baby. And from, I mean, honestly, I think it's too hard. It disgusts me. The wars that we're in. I mean, I know that my own country is bombing women, children that didn't mean us harm. In fact, they like us. Some of them that we're killing. And wow, you know, you're just bombing somebody that was waiting for you to save them, and yet you bombed them. Well, how's that good?
And if you would have been born on that side of the world, you could have been born. You could have been them, right?
Right. Here I was in this life. I was the German pilot killing the Americans. And the next life, I'm the American, and I'm responsible for helping to plan the wars that we're in today. And it's just, that's discouraging.
So I know you're about ready to get to my favorite my favorite part of the whole story, and probably yours too. He said, "You're about ready to tell me the end of the whole thing."
Yeah. You know,
amazing part.
Okay. There's the millennial plant. Okay. It's a beautiful plant that after, think of a plant that's the earth, and after the millennia of the earth, and it's gone through, and I did see this, the Demiurge showed me. Okay. He said, "Look, I failed." He's showing me his failure.
It's interesting that he already knows he failed, and that is very interesting.
Okay. He showed me his failure. Okay. I failed. The world became completely dark. People are running around in chaos. There's a remnant of people who are being loving and kind anyway, who are laughing and joyful anyway. There are these little points of light in an absolute darkness. There's no electricity, but people will give off their light. Okay. And so, you think that's like I saw in heaven, right? I saw those orbs of light, but that's going to happen on earth. But then imagine that the earth becomes completely filled with light, and people are like that. They're like those little orbs in an earth that's already completely done its course. It's everyone has learned their lessons. They're finished. They've figured out how to be the best musician, the best singer, the best piano maker, the best, whatever they want to do, and they're finished. They've found their true love.
We get enhanced DNA for this to occur, or just the dedicated hundreds of years of, you know, finding, honing your craft or whatever.
Well, I think that's there. You do hone your craft. However, you do get a much better version of your DNA because you're physically, you'll be physically lighter. And spiritually lighter. So you're going to, thoughts will be, you know, you won't run up against, you don't get a download of how to do it, but you do have the natural ability to learn faster, but you become the master.
Go to work for 40, 50, 60 hours a week.
Right. You don't have to sit there and push paperwork for 8 to 10 hours a day just so you can go home and sing for 30 minutes and then fall asleep in your pillow. You know, but you get to work on whatever it is you want to work on. I mean, if you're an artist, do your art, whatever that art is, you know, and I think it's going to be a beautiful moment.
So what happened with these orbs of light, the light that you saw?
Okay, well, at the very end, I saw the earth go through all these phases, and it goes to this brilliant light phase, right? The light goes into the, oh yeah, here's, I wanted to mention this. Those ones that are going to try to hide out inside the earth, that ain't happening. The light's going inside the earth. That's where they're going to be hiding. Those, you know, those dark souls that are trying to manipulate and control the earth, they're going to be hiding underground, and they're thinking they're getting away.
So there's no way to avoid. There's no safe spot.
Nah. Well, it'll save them for a little bit longer. I mean, they'll be the last ones to get caught. But you know, it might save them for a day or two, maybe a month. Who knows? Maybe two. Maybe a year.
What would be your recommendation of how to live your life? Like, you were going to go through a really dark, terrible time. How would you, should you, like, hoard all your food and stockpile weapons, or should you share with other people? I mean, what's your plan?
Okay, whenever that time of darkness comes, first of all, if you have food and you stored it, great. Fantastic. If people are beating your door down wanting to kill you for it, by golly, you got to make a decision at that time. That's decision time, isn't it? And when you kill that person that's trying to get your food, oh boy, what happens to, do you get to participate in that life that's right on the other side of that? You know, or do you kill that person and oops, you were shoved into a position where the whole universe is going to be watching during that time of darkness. How are you going to act? And for me, I'm willing to starve to death. I don't want to kill anybody.
It's a really critical juncture there.
It really is. I saw people fleeing around in chaos, and I saw these certain core people of people. They'll be walking together, singing. They'll be joyful. They'll be laughing. There is nothing to laugh about. I mean, the world is in literal chaos, but they're going to be the points of light. If you see them, join them. And if you don't see them, become one so the others will join you. You know, I'm not going to kill anybody for a can of tuna. I'm not going to do it. If I can hide it, I'm going to hide it. Okay. So that I can feed my family. But
what kind of scenario? Are we talking Mad Max scenario?
Yeah, it'll be worse than Mad Max.
Journalism or...
it's all, it's going to be total anarchy, total breakdown of civilization. People are going to be running, fleeing, scared, frightened, and they're going to do things that they ought not do, and especially to their fellow human being. The whole world's going to be in chaos. And what we do during that time, we can be humane or we can be inhumane. That's it. You got two choices. If you're humane, that doesn't mean you let people kill you. You know, I'm not saying not to wrestle off the boogeyman. I'm just saying, you know, you have to make that decision for your, because right.
I think at this point, like certain people be protected, like you're talking about the angels, maybe that come to your aid. You think there'll be a protection for certain people, or you think it's just.
I think that we've got to be points of light. I think that's our protection. I think that if you're in Costa Rica and you got enemies on every side and they don't attack you, why don't they attack you? Because you're the one person that isn't going to stab them in the back. I think you just got to be a point of light. And I know that there are lots of people storing up their food and ammo and guns and preparing to kill all the hordes of hungry people. I mean, if there's 7 billion hungry people out there and you got the only can of tuna, I got a feeling you're going to lose that deal.
I think the Denny or GD knows he's going to lose, or he has already lost maybe. But if he's like a master chess player, doesn't he see checkmate and just kind of, why wouldn't he give up now? Why would he have to go through all that terrible, terrible time period? I mean, does that make, when it's all over, that more beautiful that we had to go through all that?
I think he's just admitting he failed. And I think that people give in to their lower impulses. Whenever it becomes dark, we become frightened, fearful, and lash out.
At that point, he does quit, and that's when the light, you think?
After a certain period. Some people say it's 3 days. Some say it's 7 years. I don't know how. I mean, I saw it as very brief. I mean, I'd like to think it was 3 days. But, you know... To hedge my bets, I'd probably try to at least save three days worth of food. But even better, I think everybody ought to save up a certain amount of food and water just so you don't have to go out and kill somebody else for their food. I mean, that's nothing wrong with that. But as far as storing up a bunch of guns and ammo so you can kill people, I don't know. That ain't happening for me.
In a world at that point, you know, if I died, better than trying to survive all that, you know? Or do you think there's a real purpose for us to make it through to the other side so we can rebuild?
I know there's a lot of people
who... Can I fight through that period or just...
I'm not going to. I'm not saying that... I'm not saying that there isn't. I mean, there's some people, that's what they're believing in. They're saving up their instead of buying diapers for their kids, they're buying another bullet, you know? Instead of buying shoes for their children, you know, they're buying another gun.
Rebuild the planet after it's all over.
But
would we be able to reincarnate in again and be one of those vessels, or do you think we need to?
I think you got to be Costa Rica.
Really?
You know, be Costa Rica. Be that person. You know, you as a person, be that person. And if you die, so be it. Maybe you get to come back. If you don't die, then maybe everybody will leave you alone because they know that you're safe. And as long as they've got you at their back. That they don't have somebody else at their back. That's what I say. But, you know.
So what happens at the very end?
Wow. You know, this is probably the longest interview I've ever gone through. But I think that it's important to say what happens at the very end. At the very end, the whole earth explodes, and there's nothing that takes its place. The camera stays there until the end of time. So everybody who thinks the new world is right here, it ain't. The world that we're creating is the world that we're going to have. And the one that we rebuild is going to be the one we have. So we ought to be trying to save it instead of hurt it. And there is an end, though. Whenever the world ends, there's a last day for this earth. And it just, and from the internally, it just blows up. And the souls, those orbs of light that I talked about, the ones that were Costa Rica, the ones that were brilliant, singing joyful, they go out, splinter out all over the universe. And they're like star seeds. They're the seed, they seed the galaxies and the universe with human beings who've actually survived up to that point and they're complete souls. I mean, they're filled full of light and they've lived outstanding lives and the world blows up though. But the thing is that people think that it's never going to end. Time ends. And it does end. And when it does end, we're going to get to see our stories. And our stories are important. And I think we ought to create a love story. That's what I think. Now, that story that I told you, it sounded like a War and Peace, but it was 3 hours long. But, I think that it needed to be told. And I don't know if it gets told in one setting, but I did what I could for 3 hours. I saw a lot more than that.
That's a beautiful ending. I mean, that's like worthy of an Oscar. I mean, you talk about motion picture. When we watch this back, the angels are really going to be cheering over that. You know, and we will be too, right? So, anything else you want to add? I mean, I guess we should start wrapping up.
No, thank you very much for interviewing me. Thank you for letting me explore this other side of the story that most people don't want to hear.
Wow. So there you go, folks. It's a pretty amazing experience that he's just related to us. I don't know. What do you think? He's agreed to do a follow-up interview. So I didn't really have a chance to maybe get to some questions toward the end because it had already taken 3 hours. And but if you have any questions that you want me to ask them next time, please send them to me and let me know what you thought, good or bad, indifferent, whatever. So, well, thank you for listening and have a good one.